ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमल्भागवदाख्योऽयं प्रत्यक्षकृष्णमेव हि स्वीकृतोऽसि मया नाथ मुक्त्यर्थं भवसागरे मनोरथे मदीयोऽयं सफला सर्वदा त्वया निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशव भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पादयोस्तव जायते तदा कुरुष्व देवेश नादस्त्वं नो यत प्रभो नाम संकीर्तनं यस्य सर्वपाप प्रणाशनं प्रणामो दुःखशमनं तं नमामि हरिं परम् जन्माद्यस्य यदोन्मयादिदरदश्चार्थेष्वभिज्ञस्वरान् ते मे ब्रह्म हृदा या आदिकवये मुह्यन्ति यल् सूरय तेजो वारिमृदं यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषा धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तकुहकं सत्यं परं धीमहि धर्म प्रोज्जितकैदवोऽत्र परम् निर्मल्सराणां सदां वेद्यं वास्तवम् अत्र वस्तु शिवदं तापत्रयोन्मूलनं श्रीमल्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा परे ईश्वर सद्यो हृद्यवरुध्य नेत्र कृतिभि शुश्रूषुभि तल्क्षणाल् निगमकल्पदरोर्गलितं फलं शुकमुखादमृतद्रव संयुतं पिपद भागवतं रसमालयं मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तापत्रय विनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयं नमः यं प्रव्रजन्तम् अनुभेदम् अभेदकृत्यं द्वैवायनो विरहकादरम् आजुहावाम् पुत्रेदि तन्मयदया तरोऽभिनेतु तं सर्वभूतहृदयं मुनिम् आनदोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिल श्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपम् अतिथिदीर्षदां तमोन्धम् संसारिणां करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यं तं व्याससूनम् उपयामि गुरुणाम् नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेल् कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणो कुणिताभृदाननिन्दोः मम वाचि विजृम्भतां मुरारेर्मधुरीं न कनिकापि कापि गावीम् नमाओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवीं गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्या देशधारिणे श्रीमल्गुरुचरणानन्दाभ्यां नमः वन्दे नन्दव्रजस्त्रीणां पदरेणुमभीष्णश यासं हरिगतोद्गीतं पुनादि भुवनत्रयं श्रीगोपीचरणारविन्दपरमानवे नमः पीताम्बरं करविराजितचक्रशङ्खं कौमोदगी सरसिजं करुणासमुद्रं राधासहायम् अतिसुन्दरमन्दहासं वादालये शमनिशं हृदि भावयामि श्रीकृष्णाय नमः सो Two weeks back, we were discussing the Lord Kapila's instructions to Devahuti Devi in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Kapila Vasudev, in his lengthy discussions with Devahuti Devi, explained to his mother that basically the topmost yoga system is the Bhakti Yoga process, the process of Bhakti. And in situations when one is not able to develop bhakti, the process of Sangha Yoga can come helpful. Similarly, he also mentioned to Devahuti Devi that even if Sangha Yoga cannot be practiced because it requires tremendous determination and intelligence on the part of the person who is trying to advance on the spiritual side, therefore, along with the Ashtanga Yoga system, that can also help the person who wants to progress in the spiritual path. This is how Kapila Vasudeva explained. So therefore, these three yoga systems, namely, first Bhakti Yoga process, to support that, along with Sangha Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga system, Kapila Vasudeva in detail gave the explanations to Devahuti Devi. So, then after that, after these things were explained, Kapila Vasudeva said to Devahuti Devi that there are the four different kinds of devotees. Devotees in the mode of passion, devotees in the mode of ignorance, devotees in the mode of goodness. And on top of all that, there are devotees who do not have any expectations from Krishna. They serve Krishna purely out of love. That is what we have discussed in the last class. Mama gunagana lila karmani kirtanadhyair maisura saridhoga prakhyajitta anuvritti bhavadi varama bhakti sahi mrityor vijayatri kabila taniriditvam devahutyai nigadil. Kapila Vasudeva said to Lord Kapila, said to Devahuti Devi, maisura saridhoga prakhyajitta anuvritti, that there are personalities who have completely given up all desires in their life and their mind is attached to Krishna to such a degree. Bhavadi varama bhakti sahi mrityor vijayatri. That bhakti, that devotion that they have developed towards Krishna is sahi mrityor vijayatri. That it can even conquer death. And that is how he explained to Kabila Danuridi Tvam Devahutyai Nigadil. So these processes were discussed and at the end of that, Devahuti Devi wanted to know the different stages of liberation. And it is then that the five different stages of liberation, namely Salokyam, Samipyam, Sashti, Sarupyam and Sayujyam were explained to Devahuti Devi. This is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you can read. Kapila Vasudeva saying all different kinds of liberation processes mentioned there. So, when all these things were explained, Devahuti Devi asked a question to Kapila Vasudeva. And this question is so significant for one reason only, that when this question was asked to Devahuti Devi, Devahuti Devi asked this to Kapila Vasudeva. Kapila Vasudeva had to bring the basic principles of Vedic philosophy into it. And that is why you will find from now on, we are now on the 29th chapter. 29th chapter discusses the Bhakti Yoga process and eventually it comes to different kinds of devotees and different kinds of liberation. After that was explained, from the 30th chapter onwards, for 3 or 4 chapters, right up to 33, it goes into the discussion of the fate of those who have not taken to the spiritual path. Or in other words, who have followed a life in this world without caring for the Vedic injunctions. That is what Kapila Vasudeva says there. Without caring for the Vedic injunctions, if one tries to live a life in this world, what is the destiny of those people? This was the question which was put forward by Devahuti Devi and Lord Kapila started instructing on that topic. So prior to instructing this topic, because this topic is so deep and requires a deeper understanding of the Vedic principles behind all these things, we have to start from the beginning of life after death. What happens to the soul when it leaves this body? This question is always asked. In fact, Vedic philosophy is so clear about these points that one wonders that where is the question of doing research on this subject when the instructions are so clear from the Vedas, from the Vedic literature, particularly in Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna's explanations are all based on logic. It's not based on any kind of sentimental feelings. It is purely based on logic. Krishna is explaining that this is how, what happens to the living entity when it leaves the body. So what happens in this world, the time between birth and death, is known to us. That does not require much of an explanation. It is known to every one of us. As soon as a person grew up, he can see in this world what is our life, what's the moment we are born, right up to the point of death, our experience in this world is easy to explain. It is not so difficult. But what happens after leaving the body, and then when it accepts another body, what is that state? That is what is more important. And that is upon what Devakodila Vasudev, Lord Kapila, explained to Devahuti Devi in the next two or three chapters. So, generally, we see life as we accept this gross body, and we see that is known as birth in this world, and as soon as we leave this gross body, it is called death. And this is what is experienced and known by the people in this world. Most of the people are under the impression that I was born on such and such a date, and I died on such and such a day, whatever that happens. And that is the span of life, what is related to our life and death. Beyond that, there is not much of an information with us. And as far as from the Vedic point of view, life is not the beginning at the time of birth and doesn't finish at the time of death. This is the Vedic conception. Vedic philosophy is very strong on this point, that it is a long journey we have started from time immemorial, and then journey is continuing for a very, very, very long time. And in that time, it is a very short time we have between this birth and death in this human form of body when we exist in this world. And this is the basic understanding. Therefore, it is to be understood that from Vedic injunctions we understand, Krishna has instructed this again and again in different places in Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that if this point has to be understood very clearly in our head, that the life is not something what we consider as life from the point of accepting this material body and the time we give up this material body. That is only a very short activity in our real existence. Why? Why is it like that? Because this gross body, what we have externally, what is manifested in this world, is only 1/3 of our actual manifestation. Because generally, the living entity from the Vedic point of view has three bodies, one inside the other, existing. The gross material body, which is made of the five material elements, is accepted and rejected at some point, whereas the other two bodies goes along with the living entity into the in its continuous life, which happens afterwards. For example, the three bodies, namely the sthulam, or which is the gross body, and then there is the subtle body, which is the mind, intelligence and the false ego, and then there is another body which is existing within that, which is born of ignorance and which experiences the different experiences it perceives in that particular situation. For example, Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti. Krishna explains this in the 13th chapter, in the 11th canto. Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, that means the awakened state, the dream state and the deep sleep. These three states of Jagrat, Swapna, Sushupti, Krishna says there that these three states are existing in our life in this world. And in these three states, we experience these three different states in three different bodies. For example, in the Jagrat state, in the awakened state, we experience with our gross body everything. Most of the experience is with the gross body in the Jagrat state. In the dream state, it is mostly involved is the subtle body, or otherwise known as the Sushma Deham. Sushma, because it is so subtle, that experiences all the activities in the dream state. At that time, everything what we have experienced in the Jagrat or in the awakened state is completely forgotten. All we are experiencing at that time is this Sushman, or which is known as the subtle aspects, which is experienced by the mind, and particularly the mind is very active at that time. And similarly, when it goes into the causal body, as it is known as the Karana Sharidam, Stula Sharidam, Sushma Sharidam and Karana Sharidam. Karana Sharidam means that body which the living entity has at the time when it is in deep sleep. So in the deep sleep, in the deep sleeping condition, the living entity has completely gone away from the vacant state, or in the gross body, consciousness of this gross body and soul as the subtle body, and it is enjoying under mode of ignorance a certain amount of bliss or the relationship with the super soul. He experiences at that point a glimpse of that. And that body which is experiencing that is known as causal body or Karana Shariram. So these three bodies in three different states it exists. Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, Sthulam, Sushmam and Karanam. The three bodies and the three states of existence. They exist together. So, in addition to that, why is this situation so happen? Because in the Jagrat state, what is causing the Jagrat state? It is just like Upadhi. Upadhi means, in the Shastram, it's known as a sort of a medium. For example, if you want to taste sugar, through examples we can understand this easily. If you want to understand, if you want to taste the sweetness of sugar, the sweetness has to have a medium, and that is sugar. And it is through sugar we taste that sweetness. That particular aspect known as sweetness is experienced through sugar. Similarly, if you want to experience a certain color, for example, white color, if you want to experience that, if you want to see what is white, it requires a medium, just like in the form of a paper, white paper, or it's a sort of a, in the color of milk, or anything which is whitish color. So through that color, through that medium, we experience that color ourselves. So you can understand that medium, upadhi, is required for anything to experience something in this gross world. So similarly, the Jagrat Avastha, or the deep awakened state, is that state where the gross body is experiencing the material world. So gross body is that upadhi or the medium through which we experience this material world. Similarly, the subtle body is the medium through which experience the dream state. And also, it is through the karana shariram, or through sushupti state, or the deep awakens in the deep sleep state, it is through the causal body we experience that. What is the reason for the causal body? Ignorance is the cause of that. That is causing that body. So you can see from this that the basic understanding of the modern science does not go anywhere near to the understanding from the Vedic point of view. As in modern science is concerned, they have no explanation what's happening after death, nor do they have any idea what happens before birth, in between what happens to the soul. This knowledge is unknown to them. Whereas in the Vedic philosophy, especially in the Bhagavad Gita, as well as in all the Upanishads, everything, this point is stressed so strongly that unless one understands that this gross body, what we have accepted, is only such a short time in that long journey of the spirit soul as it has left the spiritual world and through traversing through this material world. And in that long passage, this short time in this material world, accepting a particular material body and leaving that material body, which is known as birth and death, is only what is studied by the modern science. Therefore, you can see from that point of view that modern science cannot offer an answer to the existence of the soul or the living entity's destiny after it leaves this material body. So today, our topic of discussion is actually what happens to the soul when it leaves the living entity, which is the soul, when it leaves this gross body. Where does it go? What happens to that? And that is our topic of discussion. What happens to that subtle body? What happens to that causal body? Where does that two bodies go? What happens to them? That is more important, because gross body we know very well, that we have got this gross body at a particular time in this world. And we also know that we'll leave this gross body one day, sometime in 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, whatever it may be. But when the gross body is finished, we are not finished. This is what Krishna is saying again and again. And in the Ekadasi Skandam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna particularly refers to this. It says there, Nudeham adhyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sugalpam guru karnadharam mayana gulena nahaswaderidam puman bhavadhyam nazareel saatmaha. Krishna says, one who do not take understand this concept, that the soul does not finish, his soul carries on, and it doesn't finish anywhere in this short passage of time, which we take this so seriously. Nudeham adhyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sugalpam guru karnadharam. That Krishna says that this nudeham, the human form of life, is an opportunity to get out of this whole existence, or not only from this from this material body, but also which are the other dangers, what exists beyond and that which is unknown to us. And because it is unknown to us, the modern civilization completely rejects everything, because it's unknown to them. They have never had the interest to understand. Most of them believe that, first of all, the belief in the soul doesn't exist. And even if some of them believed in the existence of the soul, they still do not know what is happening to the soul after leaving this material body. What happens? Where does it go? And that soul, the soul when it leaves this material body, it is actually carried away by the two things. One is the subtle body, which is the sushma shariram, and then is the karana shariram, or which is known as the causal body. So these two bodies are actually going along with the soul to the in its next phase of existence, wherever that is. So this is what happens to this causal body and what happens to this subtle body. That is what Kapila Vasudeva started talking to Devahuti Devi. Because the gross body is not important as from the spiritual point of view, gross body is not a big thing. The gross body happens, we have what is known as karma. Karma is the cause of all these things. We'll come in detail about karma when we talk about this, because Kapila Vasudeva, Lord Kapila has to tell Devahuti Devi about karma also. What does karma actually, how does karma works in this world? So there are three kinds of karma, which is generally every living entity has stocked up in his consciousness, namely prarabdham, sanjidam and agamam. That is how these three karmas are defined. Prarabdha karmam is that karma which is actually caused to this material body. So in other words, from the large stock of karma what we have behind us, a certain part of karma had to accept, has matured, or it has fructified, and with the result of that one has got a material body, and that is that material body what we have today. And as much as and when our fructified karma, which has already given cause to this particular material body, is finished, then this body, which is known as prarabdha sharira, prarabdha sharira means the body which was grown out of prarabdha karma, will also drop off. So that is what is known as death. So it is very simple to understand that prarabdham has caused the birth of this body, and when prarabdham runs out, that the body will also drop off. But prarabdham is not a big problem, because prarabdham, once it's finished, it is gone with that. But the remaining karma, which is residue in one's own consciousness, present there in the form of sushma shariram, or which is known as vasana shariram. It is also got another name as vasana shariram. That vasana shariram means that body, that karma, what is stacked inside, which will cause, which in course of time will develop into prarabdha karma. And that is what is causing the prarabdha, again the material bodies one after the other. So actually getting rid of that vasana shariram or sushma shariram is what is spiritual life is helping us to do. So once that body is wiped out, the sushma shariram and the causal body, karana shariram, which was born out of ignorance, when these two bodies are taken away or are finished, then the person is liberated. He is no more belongs to this material world. Because all these three bodies, which was covering as a sheath around the soul, has finished its existence. And that soul is free to go back to the spiritual world at that point. This is how the Shastras talk about it. But unfortunately, most of the people are under the assumption that prarabdha shariram is the only shariram, or is the only body, or that body they care so much, and they think that this body is the only thing that matters. Whereas from the spiritual point of view, from the spiritual angle, one who is trying to advance on the spiritual path, he has to be concerned about the other bodies, because it is the sushma shariram, particularly that shariram which has stacked up so much of its karma in so many different lives, which is present there in the sushma shariram, that in course of time turns out to be prarabdham, and that prarabdham becomes another material body again. So when that vasana shariram, or that body which has been existing, which has been going to develop into prarabdha karma, that vasanas are, when that is killed and when that is wiped out from one's consciousness, automatically the soul is released from that conditioned state. It doesn't have to accept any more material bodies. And they are known as those who are liberated within this life. Jivan Muktas, as they are referred to in the Shastras. So, coming to this point of the, if you want to discuss this further, first of all, we have to understand what is our present position in this material world. In this universe, in this Brahmandam as it is referred to, we occupy the earthly planet. Earthly planet is our where we are situated. Now this earthly planet is the only gross planet in this whole universe. It is the only gross planet. In other words, where people have got gross existence. All the other planets which are present in this universe are in the subtle form. They exist in the subtle form. They exist in the subtle planets. They are referred to. So, if we want to understand what happens to the subtle body and what happens to the causal body along with it, we also have to understand how these vasanas are developed within us when we are in this material world. This is important to know that. Because it is these vasanas or these propensities, what has come to us, that is in course of time building up inside and accumulating more and more karma to cause more material bodies. And for this reason only it is explained in the Shastra that vairagyam or renunciation is necessary. That unless one has come to the form of detachment to this material world, it is impossible to know that the destination of the soul is unknown to him, because this renunciation helps the person. And to develop that renunciation, one has to understand what happens to the soul after it leaves this body. And this is the reason why these things are explained in the Shastra in detail. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila told Devahuti Devi that the transmigration or the transfer of the soul from as soon as it leaves this material body is such a detailed talk, detailed subject to be explained. And for that he continued. For example, below the earthly planet in the universe, we have the seven Padala Lokas, Adalam, Vidalam, Sudalam, Rasadalam, Mahadalam, Taladalam and Padalam. They are the seven planetary systems which are underneath. They are known as Sapta Padala. That they are the seven Padala Lokas underneath the universe. In between, we have got the Yamaloka. Yamaloka is the planet where King Yamadharma Raja supervises the sinful people, sinful activities, those who have committed sinful activities, their destiny is decided by the Yamaraja there. Then there is the Pitruloka, which is next to the forefathers planets as it is referred to. All of them are in the subtle world, they exist. And they are all below the earthly planet. Now, surrounding the earthly planet, what is known as Prayagalokam. That means as soon as the living entity leaves his body in this world, the first destination the soul travels into this Prayagalokam. And from Prayagalokam, you go into the higher planetary systems. Particularly, there are two planets which are right above the earthly planet, known as Bhuvarlokam and Swarlokam. These are the two higher planetary systems which are meant for material enjoyment. Bhuvarlokam and Swarlokam. These two planets exist above the earthly planet in the creation. Once you leave these two heavenly planets, then you go to the next higher planet, which is known as Maharlokam. And it is in this Maharlokam that those inhabitants of Maharlokam are those people who have developed a high degree of renunciation, and also they have advanced so much on the side of karma, and also they have developed jnanam. Otherwise, knowledge and karma both have a role of those personalities who are habitated in that particular planet of Maharlokam. Once you leave Maharlokam and then you go into the higher planets, there are three planetary systems known as Janalokam, Tapalokam and Satyalokam. So these three planets are beyond the Maharlokam, and the inhabitants, those who live in those planets, are those personalities who are advanced due to various reasons, either due to the yoga system, Ashtanga Yoga, the great yogis, they occupy those planets. Great jnanis who have crossed beyond their already liberated souls, but they live in those planets waiting for their time to come to go back into the spiritual world. Lord Brahma takes them away with him when he goes back to the spiritual world. So such great personalities, great jnanis, great yogis. And then great siddhas, one who have acquired great siddhis, they also come to that planet, and also great devotees go there. So it is these personalities who occupy Janalokam, Tapalokam and Satyalokam, the three planets which are beyond the Maharlokam. So this whole thing, continuously, if you talk about it, the whole 14 planets actually constitute this Brahmandam or this universe. And it is in this universe, right in the middle, we are in the middle planetary system as it is referred to, in the earthly planet we live, and these higher planetary systems exist on the higher side, and the lower planetary systems below us, and the hellish planets, which are also existing at the bottom of the universe. Yamadharma Raja, so all the low activities goes below the earthly planet, or the higher activities goes above the earthly planet. This is how it is structured. The universe is structured in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, what normally happens is, that the personalities who live in the higher planetary systems, namely Janalogam, Tavalogam and Satilogam, it is not possible for us to recognize them for various reasons, because their characteristics are different than us. Because they have acquired a higher state in spiritual life, they were able to reach that places which are not touched by the problems of this earthly planet, and they have gone beyond than that. But from their planets, sometimes they descend to this earthly planet to save some people, or when they decide to come, they come here and they spend some time here, and within that short time what they spend here, they try to save as many souls as possible along with them, take them back to the spiritual world, take them back to the higher planets, and then they leave. This is why on and off you will find that throughout the history you will find great personalities who come here to these earthly planets. They descend from these three planets, namely Janalogam, Tavalogam and Satyalogam. It is from there they come. And the best example for that is Sukadeva Goswami himself. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to the arrival of Sukadeva Goswami, you will notice this mention in a particular way in the Bhagavatam. They cannot be identified by anything. Nobody knew about Sukadeva Goswami when he came here, when Parikshit Maharaj was giving up his body on the banks of the river Ganges. Actually, Parikshit Maharaj was waiting there with so many other great sages who were all discussing each other, and they were not able to offer any solution to Parikshit what he should do at that point. It was at that time that from the higher planetary systems, Sukadeva Goswami arrived there. And when Sukadeva Goswami came on the scene, nobody could recognize Sukadeva Goswami, who he was. And everyone was fascinated to find out who is Sukadeva Goswami. But they identified him in a different way. That is what it Bhagavatam says. Tallakshana jnanam, Lakshana jnanam abhi gudavarchasaha. The Lakshana jnanam means by the symptoms of that person, they found out that it is Sri Shugan or Sukadeva Goswami. That is how they identified him. The Lakshana jnanam abhi gudavarchasaha. That Lakshana jnanam is what it was means that they were able to identify him. Oh, here is a personality who has come from the Janalogam or Tavalogam, or from the planets which were occupied by these great souls. It is from there he has come. Tallakshana jnanam abhi gudavarchasa. In the Bhagavatam it is mentioned there. So Sukadeva Goswami comes down, and he came, and he only one purpose, to instruct Parikshit Maharaj about the duties of a person when he is ready to leave this world. And in that way he explained about that, and that was his mission mainly of coming here and to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to him. So like these great souls who come here and then they go back, when their business is over, they go back to the higher planetary systems. That is the process. So here what we find is that those who come here in that way, they also have a specific mission. And then when the mission is over, they go back. They don't stay here. They go back straight away back to their abode again. Now, why is this important to know is that all the other planets on the higher than the earthly planet and all the lower planetary systems, there is no thing called karma. Karma is only in this planet. In other words, in this planet what we do, to experience the result of that, we can go to the higher planets to enjoy there. Or to suffer for sinful activities, we can go down to the hellish planets to suffer the result of our activities. But you cannot create karma, neither in the higher planetary system nor in the lower planetary system. That's the beauty of this earthly planet. Earthly planet is the place where one creates karma. All the karma what we create to rotate in the higher planetary system or in the lower planetary system is created in this earthly planet. So the earthly planet has a very significant role in our life. Karma is done here. But karma bhukti, or in other words, to experience the happiness or distress or the result of our karmic activities, we have to go there to the higher planets or to the lower planets to enjoy or suffer according to our own type of activities what we have performed. This is the Vedic conception on this. That Vedic philosophy very detailed explains about that. The higher planetary system, who travels in what situation one travels to the higher planetary system, these things are explained there. So this karma is such a thing. In reality, what controls this world, it is nothing but karma. Karma is behind everything. You can see there that this karma has such a powerful influence in our life here. You can take so many examples. It can, through examples, it's easier to understand also. And when one understands the strength of karma, one can understand a lot of activities in this world, why things happen in that way. For example, generally, a lot of people want to travel to America. Many people want to go to America because they feel that America is a land of riches, they could make money or they could live a happy life there. But you will notice that everybody does not want to go to America. Only some people do want to go to America. Similarly, you will also notice another thing. For example, if you take from India, many people go to America. They go there for working or for doing business or whatever it is. They are obviously attached to go to America. And the similar way, from America, people come to India also. They come to India. Some people are attracted to come to India. But every American is not attracted to India. It's only a few people who are attracted to India. Now, in a gross sense, one may say that it is due to the attraction or due to the attraction of that particular place that is causing that person to travel from India to America or from America to India. But from the eyes of the Shastra, if you look at it, the reason for that person has to travel from India to America is because in his activities were such that the result of his activities is kept in America for him to go and consume that. So he has to go there. In the same way, those person who wanted to travel from America to India and live in India for some reason or the other, reason for him to go back to India is also the same way that it is the karma that is pulling him, that person, to back to India. No matter, even if the material, the conditions may be difficult, but still, because the power of karma is so strong that one cannot even escape from that. This is the conception of the Vedic literature. All the Vedic literature points out this karma so powerfully. In addition to that, even if you look at from the modern science, if you talk to the modern scientists, they will say that the sun planet is situated somewhere, moon planet is somewhere, and so many millions of stars, they all stay there. Now, all the stars and moon planet and sun planet, they keep rotating, they keep moving in a particular direction under the power of something which is unknown to them. Although they refer to as the law of gravitation and law of attraction, whatever it is called. But from the Shastra point of view, beyond this power of gravitation exists the law of karma. It is a karma that kept the sun planet there, why he has to stay there in that condition. There is nothing in this world which you can escape from the law of karma. And if you go into Shastra, you will find there are certain explanations given which is so wonderful and which is sometimes difficult to unbelievably strong that we will be forced to accept that karma is such a powerful thing in one's own life. And it's very difficult to give it up. Even it is given, examples are given like this. That when Lord Ramchandra was on this planet, in the Shastras it mentions like this. When Lord Ramchandra was in this planet, when Shurpanakha came there, Lakshmana cut her nose and breasts away and made her very ugly and sent her away. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna and Ramchandra is not subjected to karma because they are the Supreme Lord who controls karma. Even they, when they were here, they had to accept a certain reaction of their activities in their different life. For example, Krishna, because in Ramchandra's lifetime, he had to do this to Shurpanakha. It is said that when he came down, Krishna came down himself here, he had to make Kubja in the proper form. He had to rectify that sinful activity what Krishna has done and Ramchandra's position as by changing Kubja into a beautiful girl. So Krishna has done this. And it doesn't matter, we don't have to go into detail of these things. But the point what he's trying to get across is that even they, when they are in this world, they adhere to this law, or the powerful law of karma. And there are other examples also given to that. When Ramachandra killed Bali to help Sugriva, his brother, because Ruma was stolen by Bali and Bali was Sugriva's brother. And how did Lord Ramchandra kill Bali? Ramchandra killed Bali by hiding behind a tree. He shot the arrow and killed Bali. So because of that, the result was that when Krishna came down, an arrow was shot onto Krishna's lotus feet by Jara the hunter. And this was the reaction of that, as that's how the Shastra, Karma Shastras talks about it. And third example is given. When Lord Ramchandra was in this planet, We know that in the Ramayana the story is mentioned that one washerman spoke ill about Ramachandra. In one night when Ramachandra was travelling, the day before his coronation, Ramachandra was travelling he was travelling at night, and at that time he heard a quarrel from a house. A washerman was quarrelling with his wife, and in that quarrelling, washerman was telling her, abusing Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra, about the Ramachandra's lack of principles in maintaining Sita Devi, although Sita Devi gone and stayed with Ravana. So this incident was spoken against Lord Ramachandra, and because of that, Lord Ramachandra actually changed everything and sent Sita Devi next day to the forest. That story is in the Ramayana. Now, that washerman who has done that was not punished by Ramachandra in that life, but Krishna had to punish him later. When he came later on, when Krishna went to kill Kamsa, you will see there was a washerman who was present there, and this washerman had to be beaten to death by Krishna because he spoke ill about Ramachandra in his life, in his previous appearance. From all this, what we have to understand, we don't have to go deeply inquiring why did this happen, why that. The point right to importance is that the loss of karma is so powerful. Sometimes, some of the things what can even happen to demigods and the Supreme Lord in this world when they manifest their pastimes is also sometimes appears as though it is under the loss of karma. Otherwise, even if we sometimes find, even in the case of great soul, great personalities, they go through certain distresses in this world. Classical examples, Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you take, why Haridas Thakur had to accept a body like that and suffer through under these mlechas and yavanas? A great personality like Haridas Thakur, one may say it was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime, he was performing that. Even if it's a pastime, does it have to happen in this way? Why Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami had to go through as Dabir Ghas and Sakhara Malik and serve Nawab Hussain Shah under very, very treacherous conditions? And not only that, they experienced that distress so much that at that point their mind turned into Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for help. Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, in the situation they approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And when you read that, you can see why is that such great souls like Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, who have given the highest principles of spiritual consciousness, had to experience a life like that in this world. It doesn't matter, we don't have to go too deep into these subjects, because what we have to understand is that the law of karma is so powerful in this world that it is sometimes even difficult to understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna Himself, has to act in such a way that the karma, laws of karma is established. In other words, if you take away Krishna from this world, the next most powerful thing in this world is this thing called karma. So that is how powerful karma is, and nobody can escape from the hands of karma. So it is this karma, and it is this principle of rebirth, taking, accepting body again and again, are the two basic philosophical points in the Vedic philosophy, or the two the basics of the Vedic philosophy, punarjanmam and karma. Karma and punarjanmam, if you take these two things away from Vedic philosophy, there is nothing there exists after that. This karma and punarjanmam that justifies our complete existence in this world, without which it is very difficult to understand what happens to the soul after leaving this material body. So that is the importance of the karma and punarjanmam, the law of karma and the law of the rebirth. These two things are happening, and that is justified from the Vedic point of view. This is the two important things what controls a living entity's life in this world. So when the living entity, as we discussed before, that the living entity has only one opportunity. He can create this karma in this world. This is the place where he does everything. If he does pious activities, he gets an opportunity from this earth to go to the higher planetary systems, where it says the kind of enjoyment it is mentioned. Bhagavad Gita is very, very clear about it. Te tam bhutva sorga logam vishalam kshine punye martya logam vishandi evam trai dharmam anupravanyam gadagadam kama kama nibhande. Krishna says to Arjuna that te tam bhutva sorga logam vishalam, that when one has performed pious activities, he has an opportunity to go to Surga Logam Vishalam, that heavenly planets are very, very vast, where the sense enjoyment is also very, very high compared to the earthly planet. Tedam Bhuktva Surga Logam Vishalam. What happens then? Kshine Punye Martya Logam Vishandi. That when that pious activities runs out, immediately he is transferred back to this earthly planet again. Kshine Punye Martya Logam Vishandi. Evam Trayi Dharmam Anupravanam Dadagadam Kamagamam Labhande. Then in between what happens is Trayi Dharmam. Trayi Dharmam means the Vedas are generally Rigvedam, Yasam, Yajurvedam, Samavedam and Atharvanavedam. Out of these four Vedas, the first three, Rigvedam, Yajurvedam and Samavedam, is that what is the people who study them are known as the are known as that Trivedis, or who study these three Vedas, or who chant these Vedas, who have mastered these Vedas, are known as Trivedis. Now, these three Vedas, they refer to evam trayi dharmam anupravanam yadagadam kama kama labhandem. That in these three Vedas, it talks about those sacrifices, what should be performed to go into the higher planetary systems. That is what these three Vedas talk about. And those who have mastered these three Vedas, they are capable of performing those sacrifices, and they take advantage of that, and they perform such sacrifices, and they are able to go into the higher planets to enjoy the result of that. They are known as Trivedis. So who mastered these Vedas, who have studied the Vedas, they perform the sacrifices mentioned in these three Vedas. And therefore, evam trayi dharmam anupravanam gadagadam kama kama labhande. So they can perform these the sacrifices mentioned in that, and they can go into the higher planets and enjoy there. Krishna says that kshine punye martya logam vishandi, and as soon as that is over, their spiritual activities are finished, they have to come back to this earthly planet again. If you look into Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the living entity has some options. What the option is, like that, in the Yoga of the Supreme Person, that chapter, if you read, you will see there, Shri Bhagavan Vajra, what does Krishna says to Arjuna? Krishna says there, that, Urdhamulam adhashadam ashwattam prahuravyayam chandamsi yasya varnani yastum vedasavedavil. That tree, what Krishna is talking about, if you look into that in detail, you will see there, Urdhamulam adhashadam, the roots are going up, and the adhashadam, all the branches are downward. It is situated downward from the. It is upside down. The tree is upside down. The root is upwards and the branches are downwards. Urdhvamoolam adhashagam ashwatham prahuravyayam. Ashwatha tree, it is referred to. Chandamsi yasya varnani yastam vedasa vedavil. That chandam, chandamsi, the language of the Vedas is known as chandas. So that chandamsi yasya varnani, the Vedas are the leaves of that tree. Yastum Vedasa Vedavil. One who knows the Vedas, they know these things in detail. In the first verse, Krishna said like this, that these all the branches are downward and the root is upward. But if you look into the next verse, Krishna says something little different than that. Why is it different? It will say same. Krishna says same. Atha prasrishta tasya shagha guna pravardha vishaya pravalam. In there, Krishna says that sometimes some of these branches can go up also. Krishna mentions there in that second verse. In the first verse, Krishna says all the branches comes down. But Krishna says sometimes these branches can go up also. Why did Krishna say like that? If you look, you will see carefully. Guna pravishta guna pravaha. That guna pravaham, because of the three modes of nature, sometimes the living entities who have gone to the higher planets, they can also commit certain things which will cause problems to them. In the Mahabharata, there is a story about this. There was a king by name Nahusha. This Nahusha had gone to the higher planets. Due to his severe penances and austerities, he managed to get to the heavenly planets. Although he got in the heavenly planets, his habit was a little on the wrong side. And he met Agastya Maharshi there, and somehow or the other, due to an argument, he beat up Agastya Maharshi. He beat up Agastya Maharshi. He made a big offense. Agastya Maharshi had to curse him. He had no other option except to curse him. The result was that he had to come to this earthly planet in the form of a python and live here for a long time. And eventually he got freed from that body again. So from this you can see that also, although there is no karma in the higher planets, there is only karma what we perform here, only have reactions. Sometimes there can be a possibility in situations like this between Nahusha and Agastya Maharshi, things can happen that sometimes due to curses or due to some punishment like that, you may be pushed back into the earthly planet again to accept a body here and suffer or enjoy according to the curse what one has received. So that is also mentioned there in the Shastras about it. So this traveling of King Nahusha to earthly planet to become a python was not a karma what he has done in this planet. It was a karma of his activity in the earthly in the heavenly planet. So like this it says there. Now what happens then? If you look into this carefully, you will notice there the importance of earthly planet comes from this, that it is in the earthly planet that we can decide our future, what we want, what we, that is why it is so important, this earthly planet, that it makes it so, it makes it so important that our activities in this world has a large influence on the destiny of while leaving this world. Whatever activities one performs in this material world decides our future when we leave this material world. That will automatically decide. You cannot help it, because these activities have such a strong influence. When we are talking about Ramchandra and Krishna and about Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and Haridas Thakur and personalities like that, we have to think about it, how important the loss of karma can cause our journey back to home, back to Godhead. So generally, normally what happens is that this human being has a special nature. By creation itself, because we are human body is in this earthly planet, the earthly planet has this speciality that human being is present in this world. Why? Because human body is also a very special body compared to all other different types of body. So many different bodies were created. Brahma says there, Lord Brahma created different bodies. Only when he created human body, he found a completeness in that. Why is that? Because even in the demigod's body, demigods also are higher in knowledge. They have much higher knowledge. They have much higher mood of goodness than compared to us. They also have a longer span of life. Everything they have. But even for them, if they want to go back to the spiritual world, they have to come through the earthly planet. That is how the system is built up. The system is designed like that. But unless they come to the earthly planet, because in this human body, they get the opportunity to go back to the spiritual world. Why is it like that? Because if you look into the creation, we normally refer to as the five material elements we are made of. Earth, water, air, ether and fire. So these five material elements exist in us. In addition to that, we also have these three states of existence. We talked about Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti. Or in other words, what is known as deep sleep, awakened state and the dream state. So these three states of existence. And then we have got these three different types of bodies. Stulam, Sushmam and Karanam. Or in other words, it's referred to as gross, subtle and causal body. So these things, these three bodies exist. These three states of existence also there. And we have got these five material elements in our material body. So this is how the human body is comprising. And the same thing, the same material body is referred to in the Yoga Shastra, in the Ashtanga Yoga system. He referred in a little different way. The reason why it's different in a different way, it explained there is, in the Ashtanga Yoga system, that in the Ashtanga Yoga system, while talking about this material body, it is referred to in form of five different cells. That is how it is called, Shams as it is called. Pranamayam, Annamayam, Manomayam, Vijnanamayam and Anandamayam. This is how the nature of the different living entities are explained. Now, these five cells exist only in the human body. It doesn't exist in any other body, not even in the other higher planets and systems, in the other living entities. Because of this, Brahma Dishanaha, in the Bhagavatam it says there that Lord Brahma, when he created this earth, human body, human species, he felt a lot of satisfaction. Why? He realized that I have created some particular species which is capable of using this life to go back to the spiritual world. That was Brahma's satisfaction. Brahma found out that this particular body of these five different cells, pranamayam, manomayam, vijnanamayam, annamayam, pranamayam, manomayam, vijnanamayam and anandamayam. What are these five cells? That's also important to know. Pranamayam, annamayam means all the living entities who cannot move, who are situated like the trees and the plants, they are known as annamayam. Annamayam means they consume food from the earth and then they live on that. But there is no prana, the living force which enters into the body. Although the spirit soul is there, but the living force, what goes along with it, that force is missing in them. Therefore, they cannot move. They cannot move because of this reason that prana hasn't entered inside. When the prana enters, for example, the wind has got prana inside. So with the help of the wind, they can move. Otherwise, they can't move. They are situated in one place. They can't move from there. So you can see there that Annamaya Kosham refers to all those living entities who stand in one place, who cannot move from there. Now if you move into the next one, the worms and things like that, they are known as the pranamayam. Pranamayam means there is living force in there, but at the same time they miss so many other things. Like we have mind, we have intelligence, and we have also anandamayam, the happiness. All these things are missing in those living entities. So if you go into further from there, annamayam, pranamayam, then there is known as manomayam. Manomayam means all the animals, like the, if you look at the tigers, the lions, these, all these kind of things, they all have what is known as manomayam. They are in the, up to the point of manomaya kosham, they exist. In other words, they have got a mind, but at the same time they have no intelligence. And they cannot do anything else except based on their mind. They keep eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That continuously they carry out based on their mental proclivities. They continue doing that. They can't do anything beyond than that. They are finished there. If you go one step further than that, then you come to the what is known as Vijnanamaya Kosham. Vijnanamaya Kosham means where intelligence has come into. For example, the monkeys, the gorillas and things like that, who have come a grade higher than that, they got a certain degree of intelligence, but beyond that, they can't go further. But when it comes to human life, human form of body, he has got something which didn't exist in any of the other four things. Pranamayam, annamayam, manomayam, vijnanamayam also is there in the human life. In addition to that, he has what is known as anandamaya kosham. Anandamaya kosham means he is the only creation, he is the only living species in the whole creation who has God, who is able to enjoy and happiness. Who else can smile in this world except the human species? Human species is the only one who can smile. Why? It's a reflection of that anandam inside. Anandamaya kosham, presence of anandamaya kosham in the body is seen as a symptom when one is smiling. That anandamaya kosham is that one which is causing that smile in a human being, which nobody else can do that. Animals cannot do that. Nor the trees, nor the plants, worms, none of them have got that. It's only in the human body this is possible. And that is why all the five kosham, namely pranamayam, annamayam, manomayam, vijnanamayam and anandamaya kosham, all these five koshas are present in the human body. And therefore, human body is considered to be superior to all the other bodies. Now, if it is like that, what happens then? That therefore, the karma that this person or the human species performs has a direct effect on his destinations as well. All the other living entities are just passing through that species. They haven't got that karma. They are finishing up their karma already that is done. But in the human life, whatever he performs, it has its own reactions. Like if you throw a stone to the top, it comes back. Karma is like that. Karma is bhalaswarupa. Bhalaswarupa means anything what is thrown out, it will come back at you. It will not leave you. You cannot get rid of you. That is why great jnanis and all, they stay away from karma for this reason only. That they don't want to execute any karma in this material world because they know every karma is followed by its reaction. They cannot escape from that. So therefore, in the Shastram it says there that this Punarjanam and Karma, rebirth and the accepting material bodies in different activities are the basis of this, and this Karmakandam section or the Karma Shastram, Shastra science related to karma, is also becomes significant. And that is when one understands that, then he understands that science. That is why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, you will see there, Urdvam gacchandi sattvastha, madhye tishtandi rajasa, jaghanya gunavrittistha, adho gacchandi tamasa. That this is Krishna's definition, that Urdvam gacchandi sattvastha, when sattvagunam is predominating, his activities will be in the mode of goodness. Result will be, he will go up further and further. Madhye tishtandi rajasa, that when one's activities are mixed with pious activities and sinful activities together, then he has to stay in these earthly planets. Jaganya gunavrittista adho gacchandi tamasah. That when the tamasic activities increases in one's life, the result is that he has to go down in that process of in his future life for him. This is what Krishna explains. Now, in addition to that, there are some more things to know. That why is that? How do we know this is all true? We are just talking about it. Is it something what somebody has built it up to convince the people and to control them? No, it is not. Why? Because these things cannot be explained through books and also by theoretically with our material eyes. This cannot be seen. When we talked about Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, the three states of existence, great jnanis and the great yogis and the great devotees, they can go beyond these three states of existence and what is known as the liberated states. And that is, that particular state of existence do exist, and that we have to accept that. And it is from that state of existence that they can see what happens in the lower states of existence. It mentions there, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, that if you want to see this, it can be only seen through the eyes of knowledge. Krishna says, it cannot be seen by any other means. It cannot be proved. It cannot be proved to someone who has not developed that jnana chakshusa. Jnana chakshusa is the word Krishna has used there. And Krishna says there in the Bhagavad Gita, Vimudhananu pashyandi jnana chakshusha. That vimudha, one who is foolish, he will never see these things, Krishna says. Nanu pashyandi pashyandi jnana chakshusha. One who has got that kind of vision, through one who can understand, one who has developed that seeing things through the science of, through the knowledge, then he can see these things happening. And it is from them that we get this information about all this related to the of the movement of the soul after death. It is from them all this information comes. Vimudha nanu pashyandi pashyandi jnana chakshushah. That vimudha, one who is foolish, he will never see it, Krishna says. Why? Pashyandi jnana chakshushah. That jnana chakshusa, or the eyes of knowledge, is required to see these things. And that knowledge comes to them when they cross over these three states of existence, namely Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti. For example, those who are living in the higher planetary systems, namely Maharlogam, Janalogam, Tavalogam and Satyalogam, they can see everything what goes on in this earthly planet. How much the living entities are suffering here, how much distress one is experiencing here, is all known to them. And that is why they come here sometime, appear in this world to save as many souls as possible and take them away from this world. Out of their mercy, they do that. So when they appear, you can also see that they come here and they perform such activities to develop as much God consciousness as possible in the human species, because human species suffer from lack of God consciousness, lack of basically due to ignorance they suffer. And that they wipe off that ignorance by their preaching activities, by presenting the Krishna consciousness in different forms they present to this world and save as many people as possible from this world. So that is how they execute their activities. So, if after all this has happened, now we come to the point, what happens to the soul when it leaves this world? As soon as we leave, we talked about Prayalogam. Prayalogam means that mandalam. Mandalam means it is doesn't exist in a gross form. It exists around the earthly planet. This Prayalogam exists around the earthly planet. as soon as the living entity leaves this world, as soon as death happens, the living entity has to go to this this particular state of existence, which is known as the prayatha form. Or in other words, normally you know, in all the people who follow the Vedic principles seriously in this world, as soon as death happens, there is a period of contamination. Sometimes it's referred to as 12 days or 15 days contamination time. What is this contamination time? Contamination time means that the soul has left the body and it has reached this Prayatalokam and it is stuck there. It is staying there. And it is there the decision is taken in which direction the soul has to move next. Normally, those who are performed such activities in their life here, very, very pious activities, or who have developed such high degree of Krishna consciousness, or who have advanced spiritually, they do not get stuck there. As soon as they come to Prayatalokam, immediately they leave. They don't stay there. They go through Prayatalokam without any care for the Prayatalokam, what happens there. Similarly, those who are very, very sinful, who have performed such gross sinful activities in their life, in this world, their decision also is not very difficult. Because their decision is that Prayatalokam, it is decided that they should go into the hellish planet straight away through Yamalokam, where decisions are taken as far as their future is concerned. But majority of the people, it is very difficult to say that this Prayatalokam, the nature of the Prayatalokam is such that when you are there, it is something like this, a situation when one is very, very hungry, but the time there is no food to eat. That kind of situation. So many material desires in the consciousness of that particular soul, in its subtle body, it's experiencing. But it has no possibility of fulfilling any of those desires in that Prayatalokam. That is the situation there. And this 15 or 12 days, the contamination period, it is expected that those people who have left the body and gone away, their relatives, their close relatives particularly, they perform their activities in this world to help that person, because by their activities here, they perform so much austerities and penances at that time. There are so many things which was done in the early days, but nowadays that is not existing anymore. People have lost all that. So, but the principle Shastra doesn't go wrong. Those things are still true. That when you can help that soul who has left this world and gone to the Prayatalokam by performing, praying for him. For example, a father dies, his son can pray here for his, that his constant prayer is, the Vedic mantras talk about it, what kind of prayers are to be recited at that time. The mantras talks about it. The mantra says like this, that as quickly as possible, please release him from that Prayatalokam. That is the prayer with the mantras what is chanted at that time. And for 15 days or so time, the son performs such austerities and penances, constantly praying for his release from that planet and to continue his progress further. And at the end of 15 days, in that time, whatever you have performed, it has an effect on that person's life there. And he will get a quicker release from there. It helps him. And at the end of that period, there is a ceremony what is known as Sapindigaranam. Sapindigaranam means that activity that after the contamination period, at the end of that, everything is finished and this person cannot do anything for him who is already in the Prayatalokam. And then from then on, he is already, either he is released from there and he is going into his higher destinations or to Pitraloka as it is referred to. So it is this time what he has got to help him from here. And that is why that contamination period, it's mentioned in the, Nectar Devotion, the contamination period, why it is so important. So the contamination period, one can actually help the close relatives normally, they perform activities at that time. And to help that soul to leave Prayatalokam and go into the next point, next destination. Once he leaves that Prayatalokam, then the next transfer of that body is into the next phase of life. Now, as we've seen before, those who have got, normally, we do not know what is actually the destiny of any soul when it leaves this world. It's very difficult to say who is pious and who is sinful. In our eyes, if somebody may look very pious, But what his background is, nobody knows. What he has done in his past life, or even in this life, how many sinful activities. Today, he has put dhoti and kurta and kanthimala, but what sinful activities he has performed in his past life is unknown to us. So, it is very difficult to say that how much sinful activities are credited to one person, or how much pious activities are credited to him. And even if one may apparently act as though he is very pious, but in reality, how much pious that person is, only time will decide that. So, it is generally very, very difficult to know what happens to a person, whether he will go into the higher planets, whether he will go into the lower planetary systems. That is unknown to us. And therefore, normally, as soon as he leaves the Prayadalogam, the soul, if it is released from that, generally it is moved into what is known as Pitulokam. Pitulokam means the inhabitants of Pitulokam. It is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam who resides in the Pitulokam. In the Pitulokam planet, he gets an opportunity to perform certain activities, and it is there that the next decision is taken, what kind of body he has to be offered in this earthly planet when he comes back again here. That decision is taken there. And to help that person who has left that Prayadalokam and gone to Pitulokam, there are certain what is known as Shraddha ceremonies performed. Every year, when they say father or grandfather, anybody who is dead, left home, for their benefit, Shraddha ceremony is performed every year. Because we do not know who has gone to the Pitulokam or who has gone to the heavenly planet, we don't know that. Because of that, everybody has to perform that. This is the law. That is how the law is. So, when this ceremony is performed, in the Shraddha ceremony, actually we offer the rice and flowers and so many wheat balls and so many things are offered to the inhabitants of Pitulokam. At that point, you are actually invoking the inhabitants of Pitulokam along with your father or grandfather who has left this body. They come and they are offered this, what is known as Shraddham. The Pitakriya is performed there and they are sent back again to that planet. So there, due to the mercy of these the inhabitants of Pitulokam, a decision is taken that he may be given a better body, and a better body in the next life. But those who are extremely sinful, or it is not happening all the time, generally, when one has come to the earthly planet, it has to be understood that the person had some credibility in him, that he was not extremely sinful, that's why he has come back to the earthly planet. And from now on, his normally, normal circumstances, most of the living entities will go to the higher planets. That is the possibility. But if one is extremely sinful, he has to go back. There is no question about that. And Yamaraja's punishment and the different kinds of hellish planets, that's explained in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, what then happens is that the Pitulokam, this living entity is there. And this living entity who is in the Pitulokam, after a certain time, he comes up. He comes from there. Pitulokam is below the earthly planet. As we said before, the Pitulokam and the Yamalokam are below the earthly planet, much higher than the hellish planets. And the Swarlokam, Bhurlokam and Swarlokam are the 70 planets which are above the earthly planet. So, depending on the type of activity, what one has performed in this world, he gets the opportunity. How the activities were performed in this world becomes very, very critical. For example, when we talk about pious activities, what is pious activity? That question automatically comes. There are two kinds of pious activities. For example, all the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas, they are considered to be pious activities. That the Trivedis, as we talked about, evam trayi dharma manu pravanam yadagadam kama kama labhandem, that when one performs pious activities, if those activities were performed without desiring for any material happiness, without desiring for any material happiness, purely with the intention of pleasing the Supreme Lord, if the sacrifices were performed, that person will go into the heavenly planets. And from heavenly planets, he does not return again. This is the law. That he goes into the heavenly planets, and from heavenly planets, he will go up further into Mahalokam. Why is it like that? Because his activities were without any result, without any desiring for any result from those activities. Because when he performed the sacrifices, the understanding was that he will go into the heavenly planets and I will enjoy there, And if that was the understanding, with the intention of enjoying in the heavenly planet, if he has performed the sacrifices, then he has to come back here. He cannot go up. So that is why Vedai Sarvani Karmani Abhala Bharadaya Varnidani. All the karma mentioned in the Vedic literature, Vedai Sarvani Karmani, how should they be performed? Abhala Bharadaya Varnidani. That they should be performed with Abhala Bharadaya, that means without expecting any results from that. And that is one kind of pious activity. Abhala Bharadaya Varnidani Iti Buddha Tani Tvai Arpidani. Everything should be offered to Krishna as a sacrifice. Only then such persons will not come back to this material world. And they start their journey, what is technically called in the Shastram as Devayanam. Devayanam means, this is what Krishna says about this in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. What is Devayanam? Devayanam means that you have started the journey back to the spiritual world. Those who have performed those sacrifices without expecting any results from that, purely for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And when the sacrifices are performed, Vedai Sarvani Karmani Abhala Varadaya Varnidani Idi Bhutvatani Tvai Arpidani Savahimajaran Mami Naishkarmyam Ishe Naishkarmyam. Without any desire from that, to enjoy anything in the heavenly world, or to expecting any results from that, when the sacrifices are performed, then that sacrifices will elevate him and take him into what is known as Devayanam. Devayanam journey starts from there. But there is the second kind of pious activity. For example, there are in the Vedic tradition, certain things are very much a necessity in life. For example, one travels to holy places, Tirtha Yatra as it is referred to, visiting the Tirthas, performing all the required, following the Varnashrama Dharma system. This is another thing. Chanting the holy name. All these are pious activities. They all will help a person to release oneself to gain a better situation in the next life. That is the guaranteed Shastra. Shastra says like that. That different kinds of pious austerities, penances, performing the Dhanam Vrata Tavo Homam Java Swadhyaya Samyami. In the Bhagavatam it says there, charity, performing Ekadashi and things like that. Javam Dhanam Vrata Tavo Homam Tavas Homam Javam Swadhyayam, studying the Vedic literature, Samyami, controlling the senses. Everything will help a person to go into a higher situation after that. But when what happens is, if while performing all these things, if the person is expecting a higher happiness in this life, or if he is desiring for results from that, with the result when it is done, again he has no chance of going back to the higher planets. That is finished there. Because it has to be done completely, as Krishna says there, as pure devotional service. It has to be pure. It cannot be motivated. If it is motivated, if loving Krishna is with motivation, Krishna says, no problem, I will give you what you want, but you have to stay here. You are not expected to be there. That is Krishna's love. That is why it says there that you can perform everything. Dhanam vrata tapo homam java swadhyaya samyame shreyobhi vividaischanye krishne bhaktarahi sadhyade. Gopi said this to Uddhava, that this is our height of all happiness. Dhanam vradatavo homam javasvadhyaya samyame shreyodhir vividesh chanye krishne bhaktirahi sadhyade. That pure love for Krishna is developed within the heart. Then if one executes all these things in course of time, what will happen is that he will also join what is known as Devayanam. The same trip continued to the higher planets. There is no more coming back from that. It is not possible to fall down from that. One will continue to go higher and higher. Just exactly like those who performed in the karma margam, they performed the sacrifices without expecting any results from that, and executed activities to please Krishna. Those personalities known and go through this Devayanam. Similarly, those who perform all these pious activities, they also get the opportunity to go high. But when you execute these activities, desiring the result, what happens? That is when what is known as Pitriyanam begins. Krishna uses the word Pitriyanam in Bhagavad Gita, refers to that. Pitriyanam means going down. That means even if after leaving this material world, even if after leaving this earthly planet, after going to Pitralokam, from Pitralokam he has to come back to this earth again. How does he come back to this earth? That is the process next explained there. That from the Pitalokam, he has to go. The soul leaves that planet, and along with its subtle body with him. He has not left the subtle body yet. Subtle body is with him all the time. So you can see now that it is the subtle body that is accompanying the person all the time. The gross body has not much of an importance. Gross body comes and it goes and it's finished there. But the subtle body is carrying with him all the time. And the subtle body will determine, and the body will determine what kind of gross body he will get in his next life, under what conditions he has to take birth, and what type of life he is going to have in this world. Everything is stocked or stationed in that subtle body, or it exists in that subtle body. So with that subtle body, it leaves that world. And where does it go? It goes to the moon planet. Moon planet, when it says in the Shastram, it doesn't mean the physically planet of the moon. Along the surrounding that moon planet, what is known as Chandra Mandalam. Mandalam means that phase of existence of the moon planet. Moon planet exists in that area. But around that exists the subtle world also, where these living entities goes from the Pitaloka there. And from there, they have got their subtle body. In that subtle body, they've also got their five senses in its subtle form exist there. Earth, water, air, ether and fire, which although the material body was finished, in its subtle form, it still exists in the soul. It hasn't left the body. So now, what is the process known as Panchikaranam begins? Panchikaranam means, it is at that point that the soul has to get in another gross body in this world again. So looking for that, the process begins in this Chandramandalam, near the moon planet. And at a particular opportunity, through Panchikaranam process, it gets its gross body. And when it's Tanmatras, as it is referred to, when the Panchikaranam is over, it comes to this earthly planet again, through air, water, or the food that goes into a father's semen. It enters in the soul enters there. Now, at that time it is decided who is the father, who is qualified to be the father of that particular living entity who comes to this world. And at that point then, the decision is taken when a suitable mother's womb is moved into, and from there the body develops from there. So you can see from Praetalokam, when it's left this world, Praetalokam it has either gone into Pitaloka, and Pitaloka to Chandramandalam, and from there it has come back to the earthly planet again. Unless one has moved into Devayanam, through the process of Devayanam, it is able to go up further into the higher planetary system, or through Pitrayanam, it comes back, comes down again. So this is how the soul keeps moving in this universe. That is the process of the movement of the soul. Now, when this happens, at a particular time, when the soul has entered into the womb of the mother, that Bhagavatam explains there, at what period, what happens to this material body. Lord Kabira explains all this to the Holy Devi. On a certain number of days, 7 days or so, that slowly this it forms the form of a pea, and then different things develops in the body. So when things are developing in the body, like the flesh and the different veins and nerves and everything, at different times it develops. Even then, it is not decided what that personality will be at the end. What is its form? It's not decided yet. On the 7th month, it is mentioned there on the 4th month, it is explained there that the person who is very much imbibed in the Vedic tradition, they perform this ceremony known as, before the birth of the child, there is 3 ceremonies known as Garbhadhanam, Pumsavanam and Simandam. There are 3 ceremonies mentioned before the birth of the child. It is at that time, if he is fortunate enough, a personality who had performed pious activities, gone to the heavenly planets to enjoy, and who still has some little piety or pious activities in his credit, he is invited by the father to enter into the womb of this mother, into the womb of the mother, where he gets an opportunity again to continue develop his spiritual life further from there. He gets that opportunity there. But if he is not getting that, sometimes it can happen that one gets an opportunity to take birth in a family. He could get an opportunity to take birth in very much in families where there is no possibility of spiritual life. Things can happen like that also. So all these things are happening at that time. While within the womb of the mother, the living entity's growth is explained. And around the seventh month, the living entity starts moving. And the living entity in that particular body, as it is referred in the Bhagavatam, is Jandu. Jandu means it's neither decided how it is going to be later on. So at that time, there is a certain activities happens inside. And if you will read it all in the Bhagavatam, you will find these subtle activities, what goes on inside the womb, has such a drastic effect on our future activities as well. And while within the womb, it is mentioned there that this living entity is like a yogi. Why is he like a yogi? You can see that very easily. A yogi normally doesn't eat or sleep. Normally, yogis don't pass stool or urine because they have developed that such an extent, the control of the body. And it is the same condition that when the living entity is within the womb of the mother. He is not eating anything, he is not sleeping anything. Whatever is required is fed by the mother through what is known as the Andram. Andram is the Sanskrit word for that. And there are three coverages of the living entity inside the womb covering this material body there. This baby is covered with this three realms of this Andram, as it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So, when it is covered like that, in this yogi state, yogi is seeing his past life, because in the yogi condition, it is possible to see what the past activities were. And that is when it is revealed to him what his past lives were, how many lifetimes he has gone through, and what kind of different bodies he has gone through, and at the same time, what kind of activities he has performed. Everything comes to him in front of a screen. Exactly like in a screen, is shown to him because of his yogic situation. He is like a yogi living there inside the womb. He has no bodily activities. And because he is beyond the bodily activities, he is in a position to perceive these things very clearly inside the womb. And when he sees that, the living entity is crying there. At that time, he is thinking that what a situation I have ended up at the end. Right in the womb, inside this, when the urine and stool and everything of the mother, within that, in a completely compressed form, he has to live there. In addition to that, he is also experiencing all the miseries and distress of the food, what the mother is eating. If she is eating or drinking or whatever she is doing, all the baby has to pay for it, struggle for that, experience that inside. And this is the fate of that child inside the womb. So when it is experiencing like that, the baby is praying to when the yogi is seeing the baby yogi who is inside, he is experiencing this condition and thinks about the when the baby is experiencing this condition, he thinks about the his own mistakes, what he has committed in the past. That is what has come to him, the first thing. That I got so many opportunities to come get out of this situation. I never utilized it. This thought comes to him very, very strongly. And this is the best time when we have such a deepest realization we get in our existence, inside the womb. That is, and it says in the Bhagavatam, that the living entity, which is covered with these three circles of this Andhra, at some point in time, these three things have to break at the same time. When it breaks there, all the three has to break at the same time. And at that point, he starts moving and immediately he comes down to the earth. And how is it says? Bhagavatam says there, Viparida Anugatim Gadaha, that Bhagavatam's words are so powerful, that he comes down upside down. That is, every one of us comes to this world upside down. And what does it indicate? It indicates only one thing, that we are all completely screwed up inside when we leave that womb and come in here. And look at the way it is explained in the Bhagavatam. If you read that, you will understand how serious the whole thing is. That when we come out, generally the doctors will say, oh, the baby is crying. And why the baby is crying? If the baby is crying, they are happy. Why? Because they think he has got life in him. And we also think the same thing. Oh, everything is okay. The child has come out happily. He's crying now. So we come to this world crying. We leave this world also crying. There is no doubt about that. So in between these two crying, coming in and going out, all this, what all things, what happens, which we don't have to explain that. Why does the baby cry when it comes out? This is the most important question. Lord Kapila says to Devahuti Devi, the reason for that crying is, he is feeling so much guilt in his mind for not utilizing his past lives when he had the opportunity to go back to Krishna, to go back to the spiritual world, instead of getting lying in this condition inside of a womb of a mother, no matter which mother is, whether it's a rich lady or a poor lady, inside the conditions are the same, it's not different. And he's suffering there. And up to that point, breathing, feeding, evacuation, urine, everything was done through the mother. But the moment it is broken and the child has to come out, that service is over. The service is pulled back by the nature. And he has got the new facilities, the new the services are not open yet because pranam has not entered inside. And because pranam has not entered, while coming out of the womb, the baby is crying. This is the Bhagavata conception. Bhagavata philosophy is strictly saying that this crying is only for that pranam to come in. The pranam, when the living force enters, then everything is normal. After that, again, the whole thing, what was spoken, discussed inside, seen inside in the yogi form, everything is forgotten. At the moment, everything is gone and completely into the laps of Maya. We start our life. And then he continues his life from there. He goes on and then goes through a nice childhood, boyhood, and then about 17, 18 years old, by then he has experienced a lot of things in this world and he has come to the firm conclusion, God doesn't exist. This is the final conclusion he gets into. This is our position. If you think about it, is this not true with any young person you take in this world today? That ultimately, this is the conclusion he arrives at. After going through all of this, what Vedas are talking about, Upanishads are talking about, Puranas are talking about, all the Acharyas are talking about, Krishna is talking about, all these things are there in the books. We go through all these things, experience personally everything. And when we come out in 18 years' time, we come to the strong conclusion, God doesn't exist. Where is God? And they ask this question. Can you imagine, is there anything else more powerful than this illusion, Maya, that is encircling us and giving us this intelligence, understanding of life? So this is what it can say. Prasutim sudimarudaha. In the Bhagavadam, while referring to this, it says there that this person inside the womb is praying to Krishna that I will not do this again. I have done this mistake so many times. I could not never utilize this opportunity which you have given me to come back to you. I never used, because he is seeing Krishna there in that yogi's, in that condition, is experiencing this and he is praying to Krishna, please do not send me out from here, because if I go out again, I will forget you. This is what's going to happen again. If I leave this womb, if I come out, I will forget you. So please don't let me out. This is what he is praying. Krishna says to him at that time, Krishna also has his own logic in all these things. Krishna says to him that it's good that you have realized this now. How many times have you promised me this before? Once you promised me, you cheated me. Again you promised me, again you cheated me. Now you are promising me again. And no, you can't do that. Why? Because your mother, she has one day come to me and told me that this is my first delivery. The mother naturally has anxiety about the birth. And if I get into complications, there is nobody to help me. So she has come and told me that please help me to have a comfortable delivery. She has prayed to me like that. And now you are telling me that you want to sit inside and enjoy your rest of your life there, not coming out. He gives you a kick from there. And then Bhagavatam, the word used is prasutim sudimaryodaha. Krishna has got one kind of air called prasudi. Prasudi pushes you out. And that's when you come out, head upside down, comes to this world crying. And from there onwards, that everything what begins from then. So this is the basically, in a nutshell, the traveling of the soul after leaving this body. What happens to it from the Shastra, Vedic literature is very, very, very strong and very clear about these things. That there is no confusion about it. living entity, as soon as you accept the presence of the spirit soul, if you accept the modern science, then it's a different story. But if you accept the Vedic authority, this is what is life is all about. That life is not something that we accepted a body one day and we leave this body, life is over, and everything else will be all in heaven enjoying there. You don't get to heaven, you don't enjoy anything there. All it goes through is judgment one after the other at different places in one form or the other. And that goes on. And eventually, when one comes up to this particular human form of life, as I said before, a human life has got this opportunity to realize this. You can see this in this own world, that sometimes you take the case of a child who is 3 or 4 years old. At 3 and 4 years, he is smiling, playing, enjoying happily. When he comes to say about 80 years old, you look at the same person. Is he smiling anymore? Is he enjoying anything anymore? He had enough of it by then. So from 3 years to 80 years of life, he has realized that there is nothing much to enjoy here. So it doesn't mean that what we're not saying that you don't have to worry about anything else. We have to do everything in this world. What has to be done? There is family life, there is so many things, but at the same time, that is not the goal of life. How to come out of this birth and death? This is the process. This is what it is meant for. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam very, very clearly, Labdhva sudurlabhamidam bahusambhavande manushyam arthadam anityam apihadhiraham Turnam padet yadet anuvutti daval nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvadasyal. Labdhvasudurlabhamidam. Krishna says, I have given him this material human body for some purpose. And if he is not utilizing it, manushyam arthadam anityam abhihadhiraham. That there is only one goal, it can be used for this purpose. Adhado brahma jityasa. That it can be used for going back to the spiritual world. If this vehicle, what Krishna has given to us, is utilized it properly, one can come out of this unfortunate situation. Turnam padet yadet anumutyadaval. One day it will drop off on its own. When prarabdham is finished, this body will drop off. No matter, nobody can protect us at that time. Nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvadasyal. But this body has one advantage, Krishna says, that one can develop Shreyasa. Shreyasa means the ultimate benefit, which is the going back to the spiritual world. That is possible in this human body. No other body this is possible. It's only possible in this human body. And therefore, Krishna says, a person who does not do that, I consider him as one who is committing suicide. This is what Krishna's words are in the Bhagavatam. So, like this, in this life after death, Devakapila Vasudev explained to Devahudi Devi, and with that conversation, Devahudi Devi did not carry further conversation from there. And with that, the chapter 30 and 31 and 32 finishes. 32 chapter, the discussion happens between Kapila Vasudev and Devahudi Devi is complete. And Kapila Vasudev asked Devahudi Devi if she wants to know anything more about anything else. But Devahudi Devi was satisfied. Knowing very well, Kapila Vasudev saw that Devahudi Devi was satisfied. And Kapila Vasudev's departure from home begins at that point. And then after that, in the next chapter, Devahudi Devi decided to give up her body. After fully focusing her own mind on the form of the Supreme Lord, explained to her by her son, Lord Kapila, Devahudi Devi focused her mind on that particular form. And it was after that Devahudi Devi also went back to the spiritual world. So both departure of Kapila Vasudev and departure of Devahudi Devi is in the 33rd chapter. And with that, the third canto finishes. So when the third canto finishes, Maitreya Maharshi, we have to know, Maitreya Maharshi is speaking all these things to Vidura. That is where in the Bhagavatam it is like that. Maitreya Maharshi is also belongs to that personality who comes from the higher planets. So this Maitreya Maharshi story, Maitreya Maharshi went to see Duryodhana one day. Duryodhana was preparing for the war and he wanted to fight, and he was fully prepared to do that. So Maitreya Maharshi thought, in the Mahabharata you can read this, Maitreya Maharshi thought it is necessary that he should go on a mission. Krishna has gone and spoken to them and he has not listened to him. But Maitreya Maharshi still thought that to avoid a complication situation, you should go and speak to Duryodhana. When Maitreya Maharshi went to see Duryodhana, Duryodhana started joking with him in a very ridiculing way. He started speaking to him. And not only that, while talking, he was beating on his thighs all the time with the hand. In a very insulting mood, he started talking to him. Maitreya Maharshi looked at Duryodhana and told him, "It is the very thigh which you are beating will be beaten by Bhimasena, and that will be the end of your life," he said to him. And Maitreya Maharshi left that ashram, left the Duryodhana's palace and went away. And that is the reason why Duryodhana was beaten to death by Bhimasena with his club on the thighs. He was to be beaten because Maitreya Maharshi's words had to come true. So now, this Maitreya Maharshi, knowing very well of the background, what was going to happen in the future, what happened, told Vidura at that time that this place where Kapila Vasudeva and Devahuti Devi and Karadama Prajavati lived, all that place is together is known as Siddhavadam. Siddhavadam is the place referred to. When Vidura heard that, he was very happy about it. Why? Because Vidura was performing his pilgrimage to so many holy places, and he has gone through Siddhavadam, and he did not know that these incidents have happened in Siddhavadam at that particular place. So when he heard that, he asked Maitreya Maharshi, "Oh, that is the place where these things have happened. Kapila and Devahuti and Karadama Prajapati lived." He was very pleased to hear about that, about Siddhavadam. And he came back, and with that, the third canto finishes. So I'll just read a couple of chapters and then can leave.
Devahuti Vajam. ലക്ഷണം മഹദാദീനാം പ്രകൃതേ പുരുഷസ്യ ജാ സ്വരൂപം ലക്ഷ്യതേ മീഷാം യേനദൽ പാരമാർത്ഥ്യം യഥാ സാംഖ്യേഷു കലിതം യന്മൂലം ദൽ പ്രജക്ഷതേ ഭക്തിയോഗസ്യ മേ മാർഗം ബ്രൂഹി വിസ്തരശ പ്രഭോ വിരാഗോ യേന പുരുഷോ ഭഗവാൻ സർവദോ ഭവേൽ ആ ചക്ഷു ജീവലോകസ്യ വിവിധ മമ സംസ്രതീം കാലസ്യേശ്വരരൂപസ്യ പരേഷാം ച പരസ്യതേ സ്വരൂപം വദ കുർവന്തി യദ്ധേദോ കുശലം ജനാ ലോകസ്യമിത്യാഭിമതേനചക്ഷുഷംശ്ചിരംപ്രസുപ്തസ്യമസ്യനാശ്രയേ അപി സംധായോ ഹിംസാം ദംഭം മത്സര്യമേവ സംരംഭി ഭിന്നദൃഗ്ഭാവാ മൈ കുര്യാൽ സ താമസ വിഷയാൻ അഭിസന്ധായ യസമൈശ്വര്യമേവ അർച്ചാദർച്ചേദ്യമാജസ്വാം കർമ്മനിർഹാരമുദ്ദേശ്യ പരസ്മിൻ മാ തദർപ്പണം യജേദ്യഷ്ടവിമിത പ്രദർഭാവസ സാത്വികാ മൽഗുണശ്രുതി മാത്രേണ മൈ സർവഗുഹാശയേ മനോഗതി അവിച്ഛിന്നാം യഥാ ഗന്ധാം വസോഭവം ലക്ഷണം ഭക്തിയോഗസ്യ നിർഗുണസ്യ ഹിതാഹൃതം അഹൈവക്യം വ്യവിഹിതായ ഭക്തിപുരുഷോത്തമേ സാലോക്യ സാക്ഷി സാമീപ്യം സാരൂപ്യേ ഗതമാപ്യതാം ദീയമാനം ഗൃഹണം ദേവിനാം സേവനം ജനാം സ ഏവ ഭാരിയോഗാഖ്യമാത്യനിയമുദാഹൃത യേനാദിപ്രജതൃഗുണം മദ്ഭാവായ ഉപപദ്യതേ നിഷേവിതാ നിമിത്തേന സ്വധർമ്മേണ മഹീയസ ക്രിയാ യോഗേന ശസ്തേന നാദിഹിംസേണ നിത്യശാം ശ്രുതമാത്രം ഗന്ധമാശയൽ ഏവം യോഗരഥം ചെയ്തമാത്മാനമവികാരിയൽ അഹം സർവേഷു ഭൂതേഷു ഭൂതാത്മാവസ്ഥിത സദാ തമവജ്ഞായ മാം മധ്യേ കുരുതേ അർച്ചാവിടമനം യോമാം സർവേഷു ഭൂതേഷു സ്വന്തമാത്മാനമീശ്വരം ഹിത്വാർച്ചാം ഭജതേ മോഭ്യാൽ ഭസ്മന്യേവ ജുഹോതിസ ദുഷദ പരകായേ മാമാനിനോ ഭിന്നദർശിനാ ഭൂതേഷു ഭഗവൈരസ്യ നമനശ്ശാമിർച്ചനീ അഹമുച്ചാവതേ ദ്രവ്യേ ക്രിയോൽപ്പനയാനഹി നൈവൃഷേർച്ചയോർച്ചായാം ഭൂതഗ്രാമാവമനിയാം ജീവാശ്രേഷ്ടാഹ്യജീവാണേന്ദ്രിയോർത്തയാം സ്പർശവേദിഭ്യം പ്രവരാ
So that is the end of 30th chapter, and We have three more chapters which we will discuss in the next Sunday. So, if there's any questions or
when Devahuti leaves her body, the spiritual planet she goes to is the one with Kapila.
Yes, his own spiritual world. That planet which Lord Kapila Deva occupies in the spiritual world, he moves there into that. Okay, we'll stop there. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.
Shastraya Vichare.
Shastraya Vichare.
Discussion of the revealed scriptures.
Discussion
of the revealed scriptures. Translation. The greedy masters of his clerical and secretarial staff performed the government duties while Sanatana personally remained home and discussed revealed scriptures. Please repeat.
The greedy masters
of his clerical and secretarial staff
performed
the government duties
while
Sanatana
personally
remained home
and discussed
revealed scriptures. Purport by His Divine Grace. Sanatana Goswami was the minister in charge of the government secretariat, and his assistants, the undersecretaries and clerks, all belonged to the Kayastha community. Formerly, the Kayasthas belonged to the clerical and secretarial staff of the government, and later, if one served in such a post, he was called a Kayastha. Eventually, if a person could not identify himself as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra, he used to introduce himself as a Kayastha to get a wealthy and honorable position. In Bengal, it is said that if one cannot give the identity of his caste, he calls himself a Kayastha. On the whole, the Kayastha community is a mixture of all castes, and it especially includes those engaged in clerical or secretarial work. Materially, such people are always busy occupying responsible government posts. When Sanatana Goswami was relaxing and feeling inclined to retire from government service, many Kayasthas on his secretarial staff were very eager to occupy his post. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that when Sanatana Goswami was a government minister and the Kayasthas who assisted him saw that he was reluctant to continue, they became very expert in their duties. Sanatana Goswami was a Brahmana belonging to the Saraswata Brahmana community. It is said that when he resigned, an under-worker named Purandara Khan, who was a Kayastha, occupied his post. So, this is the chapter where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begins his instructions to Rupa Goswami. So, in this particular chapter, this description of Sanatana Goswami's situation, especially in relationship with his position as the chief minister of, or the prime minister of Nawab Hussain Shah, and how Sanatana Goswami was trying to relieve himself from that position. You can imagine very well the stress or the confrontation, what was going through Sanatana Goswami's mind at the time when he was working in that situation with Nawab Hussain Shah. Sanatana Goswami, not only by birth he was a Brahmana, but because of his extremely high transcendental qualities, wanted to give up this job, but because of the nature of circumstances he was forced into, he was in the tremendous anxiety and continuing to analyze how one can come out of that situation and engage himself in the service of the Supreme Lord. And this is what was actually the crisis in his mind. On the externally, he was engaged in the service of Hussain Shah, because on a material level, that was the position he was forced to accept. Due to circumstances in life, sometimes we all are actually forced to do some things beyond our desire. Even when we don't desire it, sometimes it is forced upon us in certain situations. This is what that is showing to us. In the Mahabharata, there is a verse referring to that. Na jānāmi shabdam, na jānīnu vṛtti, na jānāmi shabdam. That sometimes
one knows what is dharma, but one is not in a position to perform that dharma. In some other situation, one knows what is adharma, or in other words, irreligious activity. But at the same time, he is forced, knowing very well that it is adharma, or it is against the religious principle, still he is forced to accept that and forced to do that particular activity. So this is the material world, that is the way things happen here. So Sanatana Goswami also was in the same situation, that it was very, very difficult to find himself, that he had to serve Hussain Shah on the one hand, and on the other hand, his mind was moving towards Krishna closely, that he wanted to give up that service to Hussain Shah. So in that situation, Srila Prabhupada is explaining in these words, what was the social position in Bengal at that time. Then the Varnashram Dharma was very much intact at that time. Varnashram Dharma was very much intact. So Sanatana Goswami, being a Brahmana, and not only by birth but also by the qualities of that personality, that he wanted to execute his religious principles as a Brahmana, but due to circumstances he was forced into this position as a minister. On the other hand, the Kayastha community, who were actually engaged in these dealings and dealings of the government or ministerial positions, they were always looking forward to take up the job of Sanatana Goswami or take that position from him and find the pleasure in doing so. So this is the politics, this is the politics of the government, that how systems work in the government. But although it is like that, by Krishna's grace and Sai Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's grace, Sanatana Goswami continued to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam at home. That is the culture of a Brahmana person. The culture of Brahmana is such that irrespective of all the opposing elements in the at home, or opposing elements in his normal life in this world, in spite of that, he is able to turn his mind towards Krishna. This is the Brahmanical quality. Brahmana's qualities are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna also says there, Shamo Dabastapa Shaujam Kshambirajavamevajam Jnanam Vijnanamastikyam Brahmakarma Svabhavajam. Brahmakarma Svabhavam, or the Brahmana's nature is such that irrespective of so many obstacles or impediments on his path in executing spiritual life, in spite of all that, Sanatana Goswami continued to read Srimad Bhagavatam. He did not give up Srimad Bhagavatam because he had to do this job for Hussain Shah. On the other hand, Sanatana Goswami made it a point that no matter what happens to me in this material life, this is the highest realization of a Brahmana. A Brahmana true by nature. That in spite of all the other impediments, Sanatana Goswami stuck to this position that Srimad Bhagavatam, releasing Srimad Bhagavatam, is the duty of a devotee or a Brahmana. That is what his conclusion was. So you can see from here that Sanatana Goswami, no matter how much he was put into difficulties, and when Hussain Shah came to know about Sanatana Goswami's intentions, that Sanatana Goswami was not taking his position seriously and supporting him. On the other hand, Hussain Shah's plans were so devious that he wanted to conquer country after country, and he wanted to expand his empire. And in that process, whoever comes on the way, he was ready to smash them. So this was the type of mind that Hussain Shah's mind was working on. Sanatana Goswami had no interest in that. He could see a life beyond this death. That is a Brahminical quality. A Brahmana does not think that this short span of life from birth to death after accepting this material body is the only life. Life in the Vedic point of view is not limited to birth and death of this material body. This material body, this acceptance of material body and the rejection of this material body, which is theoretically called life and death in this material world, is not what is actually the life and death, what is actually the life as far as the Vedic scriptures are concerned. Vedic scriptures are concerned, life is that journey what we have begun as spirit soul from the spiritual world, traveling through the material world for a long period of time. And in that long span of time, what we have gone through this material world, it is only a very, very short time that we live in this material body. So a Brahmana by nature, he has, because the higher understanding of life, and who sees beyond this body and understands that as spirit soul we have a relationship with Krishna, and that relationship, establishing it back, is the golden opportunity of this human body.
So the Brahmana has that realization in him so strongly, and because of the mood of goodness he is situated in, Sanatana Goswami's mind automatically gave up all the unnecessary association with Husain Shah, and his plans began to manifest from then on. It is in that situation, as usual, that when Krishna knows that a devotee has a strong desire in him to come back to him, automatically Krishna's arrangement also begins from there. And that is what we find here. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's arrival on the scene, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's retrieving Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami from that awkward situation and bringing them back into their Krishna conscious position is what is going through in the next few verses. Sanatana Goswami discusses Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is Paravidya. In other words, it is the transcendental knowledge beyond the material understanding of life. That in the material life, so many things are called knowledge in this world. But as far as the relationship with Krishna is concerned, it is that knowledge which takes the living entity back to the spiritual world that is known as Paravidya, or the knowledge beyond the material world. The knowledge that helps us to maintain this material body in this world, to maintain our social activities in this world, that knowledge is not considered to be knowledge at all. That knowledge is material knowledge, and material knowledge is not capable of transporting us from this material world to the spiritual world. And that is where the necessity of Shastras comes in. Shastras are necessary from this point of view, that without the knowledge of Shastra, we cannot understand that how do we get back to the spiritual world, what is the possibility, and also our real position in this material world. All this is known to us from the Shastra. So Shastras helps us to come beyond, go beyond the existence of this material life, beyond the material world, and takes us under complete understanding, gives us complete understanding of the spiritual world and our journey back to the spiritual world. So when the journey has begun, automatically the devotee takes a shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam, it says there, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam, that for Vaishnavas and for the devotees, there is no other Puranam which is much more dearer to him. That is because Vaishnavanam Priyam Srimal Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam, that Amala Puranam, or this particular Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam, which is free from any other knowledge regarding to material life. Srimal Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam. Then what happened? Yasmin, therefore, Paramahamsamegam Amalam Jnanam Param Giyadev, that Srimad Bhagavatam is capable of delivering that particular spiritual knowledge, jnanam param giyade param jnanam, or the supreme knowledge whereby yasmin paramahamsyamekam amalam paramahamsya dharmam. Paramahamsya means one who has crossed beyond the material existence. That normally in the Shastras it is mentioned that when one leaves this material consciousness, automatically he moves away from the activities of this world. That when the consciousness is elevated, or when one's consciousness transforms or goes beyond this material body, the material activities and material senses and all our interests in this material world, he goes into a state already within this material body, he goes into a state of realization. So in that realization, it is said there, that is known as Paramahamsa Dharma. Paramahamsa Dharma means that dharma or religious principles of a personality who has attained or who has achieved the highest activity and is engaging in the service of Krishna. Yasmin paramahamsyamekam amalam jnanam param giyadem. That higher knowledge which is required to take that devotee to that paramahamsa position is what is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is why it is mentioned like that. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam amalam yad vaishnavanam priyam. Vaishnavanam Priyam, for Vaishnavas, this is the dearmost literature. Why they consider Srimad Bhagavatam as the most sublime literature? For this one reason only. Yasmin paramahamsamegam amalam jnanam param giyadem yatra jnana viraga bhakti sahidam. That Srimad Bhagavatam brings a person to that realization. Yatra jnana viraga bhakti sahidam, jnanam and vairagyam, the two limbs which goes along with the devotion. Along with that, detachment to this material world. Although a devotee acts in this material world, all his activities are such
that is attachment to the vessel, so those activities do not exist. And that is why it is known as Naishkarma. Naishkarma Mavishkritam Yel Shrunvan Vipadhan Vicharanavaro Bhaktya Vimuchir Nara. That what will happen is, if one studies Srimad Bhagavatam seriously, and if one enters into the different instructions of the great souls who appears in Srimad Bhagavatam, what will happen to them is, Yel Shrunvan, when one starts hearing the process mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vipadhan, then one start contemplating on that, the thoughts that Bhagavatam has given to the devotee, Vicharanavaro, then when he starts analyzing them, analyzing means mind. Mind is, what is mind? Mind is another factor involved in that. It is a mind that makes our spiritual progress higher or lower. It is a mind that determines where we are going to. Even in theoretically, we may absorb so many things by our intelligence. If the mind has not absorbed that, that knowledge is not considered to be effective. This is the difference between the mind and the intelligence. In intelligence, we absorb things. We understand theoretically what it means. But what is mind? Mind is actually that the different kinds of thoughts that has gone in, it is analyzed in the mind. That is why it is known as Vicharadhara. That means it's the flow of thoughts that comes. And this mind is constantly analyzing and giving us the understanding. And So it is with the help of the mind that we are able to absorb what has been given to us through the intelligence. So although Shastra knowledge, the knowledge in the Shastra has been learned, if the mind has not accepted it, that is why in the Kapilavasudeva also says the same thing. Cheda kalvasya bandhaya muktaye chalpano madam guneshu saktam bandhaya radam vapumsi muktaye. That the three modes of material nature is in the mind. Similarly, the spiritual knowledge also, what has been given to us from the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, that knowledge, unless it comes into the mind, it has not actually has any effect on the person. That is why it is says there that yes, ishunvan vibhadan vicharanavaro bhaktya vimuchirnara. That automatically, once it has entered into the mind through vicharana, vicharanavaro bhaktya vimuchirnara, that automatically, once that thoughts goes in, immediately the process of devotion begins from there. That automatically that bhakti process cannot wait anymore, because it has entered into the heart so seriously that it is so strong inside that all other material activities immediately vanish from that person, and it is only Krishna consciousness that remains in that heart. This is the devotee's position. So Sanatana Goswami, who knew this very well, that actually engaged in the service of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, analyzing Srimad Bhagavatam, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam with the devotees. This was the activity Sanatana Goswami engaged in. And from that activity, he derived tremendous pleasure. And the absorption in Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam is that what Sanatana Goswami wanted to relish. And it was that desire of Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fulfilled at a later day by instructing them to write their famous commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam and also the process of bhakti through Srimad Radharani to Krishna. Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu come to that realization? Why did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu give this to that devotee? Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami were the two qualified Goswamis or the devotees who are able to appreciate and understand that kind of devotion of Srimad Radharani. When Srimad Radharani is praying to Krishna, Radharani in the middle of the rasa dance, when in the Srimad Bhagavatam this is mentioned, that in the middle of the rasa dance, when the gopis ran away, when the gopis lost Krishna, Krishna left all the gopis and took Radharani along with him and went away from the scene. And all the gopis were very much upset in the absence of Krishna. So eventually they started searching for Krishna. And in that process, they found out where Krishna was. They saw Krishna and Radharani together. So by now, when Krishna saw that other gopis were following him, following Krishna and Radharani, Krishna took Radharani away from there and went into another secluded place. It is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam while referring to the rasa dance. So at that point, Srimad Radharani was actually in association with Krishna. And Krishna knew very well that all the other gopis were looking for them. And they found out that Radharani, one gopi has gone with Krishna, and in their knowledge, they came to know that it was nobody else than Radharani. And eventually you will see in the Rasa dance that Krishna also left Radharani at one point and ran away from there. That was the time when Krishna felt that there was a slight amount of pride even in Radharani's mind. So you can see from the history of the great devotees, including Srimad Radharani, that even when a slight pride comes in, Krishna immediately disappears from there. And Radharani knew very well what is distress when Krishna has abandoned somebody. This is the most interesting thing, that it is only who knows very well this point is Srimad Radharani, nobody else. Radharani knows very well that if Krishna abandons somebody, what is that distress means. And that is why even today, anyone who prays to Radharani prays with this hope that since she knows what is distress, let that distress not come to us and let Krishna not abandon the devotee. This is the devotee's prayer to Radharani. A devotee prays to Radharani because Radharani knows that distress. When Krishna abandons the devotee, what that distress means. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to this, Sukadeva Goswami says, Iti gopya pralayanna pralabandhyascha jitrada niradhusu swaram rajan Krishna darshana lalasaha. That all the gopis were crying together in the absence of Krishna. Iti gopya pralayanna pralabandhyascha jitrada niradhusu swaram rajan Krishna darshana lalasaha. That in that way they cried for Krishna. And eventually, Tasama Virabhuchavini Smayamana Mukhambuja Pidambaradarasradhvi Sakshal Manmada Manmada. That eventually, when Krishna appeared in front of them, the gopis and Radharani complained to Krishna for the disappearance. And there is an expression in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the gopis of the distress they experienced in Krishna's absence when Krishna left them alone. And this particular rasa, or this particular aspect of Krishna consciousness, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to expand through Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. And by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire, by Krishna's desire, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami relieved from all their material entanglements, and they were given that golden opportunity to establish the process of Krishna consciousness in this material world. So I'll stop here. If there's any questions, please.
Thank you for a very wonderful class. Just a small point. We may be able to understand, as you mentioned, intellectually, that one may accept the subject matter as truth.
Yes.
But we don't absorb it or accept it on a mental plane.
Yes.
What is the factor which distinguishes? We see two persons, they might seemingly both accept Krishna consciousness intellectually.
Yeah.
One, on the mental plane, accepts more than the other.
Yeah.
One just mentally just retains their impressions from so many other areas, and the other one doesn't. What is the determination?
The way it works is like this, that the a devotee, when he understands Krishna consciousness, studying Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, he understands the principles of Krishna consciousness. But all that what has gone in, if that has not gone into the mind, but it stays on an intellectual level, it does not have much of a significance. Because if you see the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there this particular point discussed very carefully. When Hiranyakashipu's brother was killed, Hiranyakashipu got very distressed. He is a demon, but he got very distressed. And in that distress, he goes to his mother and he gives a lecture on philosophy. Philosophically, he is trying to convince her that you know that I am not this body. This is how he is starting. So all the knowledge what the demigods have, the demons also have. They also have the same knowledge what the demigods have. The demons have also got the same knowledge. But what is the difference between the demigods and the demons? That's where it comes to. That the demons, they understand things, but nothing has gone into the mind. Mind is full of the mode of passion, or the Rajogunam is working inside very strongly. Whereas you can also see another thing, Hiranyakashipu performed such extensive austerities and penances The demigods don't perform any serious austerities and penances. They just live their life every day. But the difference is that the demigods all the time accept the authority of Krishna. And their rajogunam, the mode of passion, has been controlled very strongly by them. And therefore, this whole information or the knowledge from the scriptures gets absorbed in the mind through the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness is there in their heart, it is able to absorb that knowledge and transforms that in their lifestyle. In other words, dependence on Krishna becomes very strong in their heart. Whereas the demons, particularly the Hiranyakashipu and so many others in the history, you will find, they will know all the scriptures as much as the demigods knew about it. But as and when it comes to the question of practicing it, they couldn't do it. Why? Because it stayed on the intellectual level. It has not gone into the heart. Or in other words, it has not transformed them as it should do, as it is expected to be done in the case of studying the Shastra. So this is the difference, that the rajogunam or the mood of passion is inside, in a large level inside the heart. That rajogunam will control so much that it will not allow these thoughts from the scriptures comes in to influence the person. So therefore, one has to be situated in the mood of goodness to understand them. This is the conclusion.
Between two devotees, demons and devotees, as you explained.
Yes.
Between two devotees, how can we evoke that? I mean, is there something, is it just mechanical? It sounds very mechanical. I mean, if you're in a mode of goodness, you absorb it. If you're not, you don't. So what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, well, the mode of goodness is such a thing that when one is having that, the lower modes of nature, although externally one may appear as a devotee, inside his consciousness what changes have happened is very difficult to determine from outside for a person. Now, externally many people may look devotees, but inside the heart, how much surrender is there to Krishna? That is still a point it's very difficult to determine that from outside. Outside one may say, okay, I have read the Bhagavatam, I have studied Bhagavatam, and I have understood Bhagavatam. But if the Bhagavatam has changed that person's consciousness and understood that Srimad Bhagavatam means only one thing, that surrender to Krishna. That's the goal of life. But if that surrender is not complete, then immediately it shows that the purification inside is not complete. That's what it means. That this lower modes of nature, particularly Rajogunam and Tamogunam, is always there in our consciousness. It's covering our modes inside. And this Sadhugunam, unless that grows inside, it will not absorb that principles of Krishna consciousness easily. And this is a reason that even though we may say we categorize devotees and demons only on one reason, that when we say somebody is demon, for example Hiranyakashipu, he came in that dress as a demon. Originally he was Jaya and Vijaya from the higher planets, from the Vaikuntha planet. But when he came in that dress, his attitude was enmity towards Krishna. And that enmity has not gone away. And that enmity is very strong inside. And as long as that enmity is inside, it is very difficult for him to accept that the supremacy of Krishna or the authority of Krishna. That's why he was constantly fighting. Although he knew all the Shastra, what Vedic literature talks about, but still he was not able to reconcile with that. Similarly, for a devotee also, even if we have externally accepted everything, because the tamogunam inside is so strong, that tamogunam has not gone away, still we have difficulty in total surrender to Krishna. That is how it happens. That when that mode of goodness is totally manifested, Bhagavatam says a devotee who has come to the mode of goodness and who acts in the mode of goodness, in the 11th canto, it is mentioned a particular verse, Shrunvan Subhadrani Radhangamani, that a personality who has come to that level of consciousness, he does not care for this world anymore. He has gone beyond the modes of nature. Or in other words, his consciousness is so elevated that he will not care of what goes on in this material world. That is the nature of that person. So only by the symptoms we can understand that a person in the mode of goodness, a person in the mode of passion, how they act. And that is how we can understand that. But how to do that is that only by purification. And that purification is the process of Krishna consciousness. Studying Srimad Bhagavatam and the other associated activities.
Are you saying that then that manifestation of goodness in our devotional activities is dependent upon our aversion or lack of aversion towards Krishna? I mean, what is the root source of it? I mean, is it just an external thing? I mean, there must be some root. Is it just simply a person's actual level of attraction or animosity towards surrender?
Yes, what the Bhagavatam talks about is in many instances is that the conditioned soul has so many anarthas in his heart. There's so many, like, how do one determine one is in mood of goodness or not? That you can see. That mood of goodness, Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita also, a few verses he says, these are the qualities by which devotees work, or these symptoms of a devotee. And then there are a few verses which talks about the qualities of a person in the mood of passion, or and in the mood of ignorance. So if those, all we have to do is to look into our own heart and see which of these qualities are controlling us. And from there we can see that am I pure enough to say openly that I have that degree of Krishna consciousness in me that I can call myself a devotee of that level. But by and large we can see from our own analysis, one who closely analyzes one's own mind, one can see that many of the qualities associated with the demonic nature is very much persisted in our own heart. That has not left us still. Although externally we may not act in the demonic way, the demonic qualities, what Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, are very much there in our heart. When the right opportunity comes, they will also again take its shape and come out. It will not hesitate at all. And from it is only from these qualities one can say that the purification is not complete, that there is a lot to be purified still. And Krishna says that when that purification has happened, automatically that person will not be concerned at all about this material world. His activities will be such that his pure love of Godhead, pure love for Krishna, will manifest in him. And that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited and said so many instances. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand that. Still looking at the kind of the real thing, which is it a very spiritual, completely, is it the soul who has anything to do with all of this? I mean,
soul has nothing to do with all these things. Soul is completely independent of all these mental activities. But once a mind, this attachment and liberation and entanglement bondage is comes from the mind. It is not come to the soul. Soul is neither entangled nor liberated. Soul is transcendental to all these activities. But this very fact that under the influence of Maya and under the influence of the modes of nature, we are actually entangled in this world. We feel that very strongly. So to freeing ourselves from this condition is what this devotional process is helping us to do. That we can come out of this situation by practicing Krishna consciousness. That at one point, when the consciousness is elevated and we have come to that situation, that we have nothing to do with the modes of nature, we have nothing to do with the activities of this material world, immediately that soul is originally situated in its proper position. But there is no single cause as such you can pinpoint and say, this is what that is. No. It is the conditioned state of the living entity that is making it to accept this material body and the activities of this material world in its as real.
So what determines to go the other way? That one soul accepts the absolute and wants to reject.
That is what is known as conditioning, isn't it? It has come through
the other way.
Different.
One wants to get out of it.
Yes. Yeah. But when it has to.
Is it a conditioning that determines it, or is it the desire of the soul who has nothing to do with this conditioning?
Well, this is the thing. That this knowledge, although we accept this in theory, that soul has nothing to do with this, we have not even come out of this bodily level. What to talk about the understanding of the soul? Even before we discuss the question of soul, we have to come out of this bodily concept of life. That we have not even come out of the bodily concept of life, what to talk about the release of the soul from the entanglement? So in the Bhagavatam, while discussing this, Krishna says to Uddhava, that if you want all these things to happen, Krishna says to Uddhava, that you have to ask me. That is what Krishna says. That ask me for the help. And when I want that to happen, it will happen. Till that point, no matter how much you struggle and endeavor in this material world, it is not going to work. Unless and until that point when Krishna shows that special mercy to the devotee, this devotee has been looking for me and he has been trying to come out of this conditioned state for so long a time that Krishna desires that, let that happen to him. And when Krishna wants that to happen, automatically in a 1 second, this bodily concept of life will go and all the other conditioned state will also go.
That seems to be the key to living in his faith.
Yes. Yes.
And taking shelter of Krishna,
yes.
Not trying to mechanically adjust things or mechanically just try to superimpose the mode of goodness in his...
Yeah, you cannot impose mechanically also mode of goodness. Mechanically it's not possible. Mode of goodness will come but without understanding that what is actually obstructing me in my progress in the spiritual life, I may be doing so many things without understanding. In this world, we have two things in our hand, knowledge and work. This is all, everybody does these things. Why? We understand something and then we work on that basis. This is what is the general nature of the living entity. So unless we know what we are doing, it's no point in doing something without knowing what we are doing. So that's why it's necessary to know that what are those qualities which will help me in my spiritual life or in the progress of spiritual life, what are those qualities which I should reject? And that is where mode of goodness and passion and ignorance has to be properly understood. Because if we think, sometimes mind has a nature to justify everything. What one does according to his conditioned nature, he will act in this world. And then he will use the mind to justify that. But from a Bhagavatam we understand that certain qualities is conducive for spiritual life and certain qualities are not. So one has to constantly struggle, endeavor hard to get rid of those qualities which are blocking his progress in developing the mode of goodness and to give up the association of the lower modes of nature. But as you said rightly, it is not possible always in one's mind to discriminate that all the time. And therefore, a devotee has to know the alternative except to take Krishna shelter. From Krishna's side, Krishna says that Krishna glorifies. Krishna said to the gopis once that gopis didn't study any Bhagavatam. Gopis didn't do anything. They have not performed any penances nor austerities. Tena dhida shudigana nobhasidam hattama avradatat tadavasa salsangan mahamubhagadaha. In the Akasha Skandam you will find in the Bhagavatam. Krishna says there that these gopis, they never performed any austerities. They never performed any penances. All they have done is one Katyayani Seva, which has done for 41 days or so. This is the only thing you find in the Bhagavatam. They have performed. They never studied any Vedic scriptures. But still, Krishna considers them as the topmost devotees. How did this happen? Uddhava asked Krishna. Krishna said, because they were in the highest mode of goodness. So Uddhava was surprised at how they never learned about goodness anything. So how did they attain that mode of goodness? Krishna said to them, because they associated with me. This was Krishna's answer. So Krishna is very clear that in the mood of goodness, automatically Krishna consciousness will blossom, it will bloom. But in the lower modes of nature, it will not happen. That is what Krishna is saying. So higher modes of nature is absolutely mandatory to develop Krishna consciousness. If we think that by staying in the lower modes of nature, Krishna will help, Krishna says no, higher modes of nature is necessary. Therefore, Krishna glorifies Satugunam or the mode of goodness as the absolute necessity in spiritual life.
So could the mind be the vehicle by which one can reject the outward reaction in the mode of fashion? Can we use the mind? I mean,
yes.
Then automatically goodness will...
Yes. When the mind is purified, in other words, the mind, what does mind mean? I was saying that before. Mind is nothing, but those ideas which you have intellectually accepted from the Shastra or the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, those thoughts which goes in, it is constantly being analyzed by the mind. That's what mind does. So when do you know that mind is present in one person? There is no a specific location where you can say where the mind is. Nobody knows where it is. Different people say different things. But we know one thing, there is a thing called mind, because mind does only one thing. Whatever knowledge that is coming from through the senses and intelligence, it is being analyzed by the mind all the time. Now, if that analysis is purifying the person, or in other words, the thoughts are such that it purifies a person's consciousness, nicely and elevates him, then that mind is helpful in him. Krishna says, Durjayana Mahamana, of all the things, most difficult thing is to control this mind. But Abhyasa Yoga Yuktena, Krishna says, by practice, it is possible to do that. So this is why it's necessary. Shastra helps us to get that thoughts into us, that kind of thoughts favorable, which will go into the mind and eventually purify the mind as well. So mind can help in a person's spiritual life. If one is able to develop that, in everywhere in the Bhagavad, you only find this one particular thing. This subtle body, what is known as the mind, is the cause of happiness and it's the cause of distress as well. That when the subtle body, when that is destroyed, you are freed from this material life once for all. But how do we destroy that? And that is the destruction of this mind. In other words, all the impurities that is in the mind has to go. And till that is gone, our activities will still be, till that hasn't gone, our activities will be still on the platform of material life, material consciousness. So that is the purification process that goes on through the devotional activities.
Practically we see that devotees have joined the movement and taken up the principles of Krishna consciousness. And we say, oh, he's such a pure devotee. But then we see that when profit, adoration, and distinction is taken away from that devotee, that they fall down to such an extent that first they give up chanting the holy name, and from there they may even fall further. But at the same time we say that whatever you've done in spiritual life is never lost. So what is it that after the devotee has fallen down from chanting and maybe even following the principles, what is it that brings them back again to spiritual life?
It is that what they have performed in their earlier time in spiritual life. That's what's bringing them back again. So when one falls from that higher position in spiritual life, when one is finding it so difficult to proceed further in spiritual life, Krishna says, Rajogunam is strongly in the person's heart. It is a mood of passion. Krishna specifically mentioned this in the Bhagavad Gita, that why? That Rajogunam has been specifically pointed out, because Rajogunam will not allow a person to even if he is intelligent, it will not allow him to sustain that spiritual consciousness. It will destroy him, that point. And that is what has always happened. That when Rajogunam takes over and the mode of goodness is missing there, Rajogunam will control the person so strongly that it will not be possible for him to forget that lower mode of nature. He is not realizing that he is in the mode of passion. He is thinking that I am a devotee and I am doing so many things, so I must be okay. No, you're not okay. You're only okay when your activities are in the mode of goodness. This is what Krishna is saying. And all this history in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, it simply points out to this one point, that unless the mood of activities are in the mode of goodness, activities are in the mode of goodness, those activities will disturb you. Hiranyakashipu's activities, he knew everything, but it was a distraction of the whole world. That was the kind of activities. What was the result? He performed penances and eventually he destroyed himself. So what was the purpose of those penances? This clearly shows that unless one is in the mood of goodness, the knowledge will not have any benefit for that person. And that's what happens to even some of us. That's the same thing happening. What brings him back into the spiritual life again is that even that little thing, what he has performed with some sincerity in his spiritual life, Krishna gives a credit for that and somehow or the other makes a situation favorable for him to come back again into spiritual life. That is Krishna's causeless mercy, nothing else.
Like letting the dog on a leash for a little while. Krishna, there's a verse, isn't it? It says, Krishna never lets you go.
Yes, that's right, yes. Krishna never let anybody go, yes.
It may appear to be gone, yes. It's like going on a leash.
Temporarily, yes, yes.
Eventually Krishna.
Yes, Krishna shows that, gives an opportunity to come back again to spiritual life, yes. That's right.
So therefore, being in
the mode
of goodness, like you were saying about some devotees, we can say, is not something acquired forever. And then if the mind looks again towards other type of activities, then again the person goes into a
moment. Yeah. What you have to remember is that devotees, when they have gone into the lower modes of nature, you should never imagine that they were always in the higher modes of nature before. We assume sometimes that we are in a higher mode of nature, but actually we are not. If we were in the higher modes of nature, a person's activities in the higher modes of nature, a person's activities in the lower modes of nature will show up in what consciousness he is. So sometimes externally, physically, one may be very active, even in the lower modes of nature, or even in the higher modes of nature, one may be very active. But actually, it is very difficult to determine what modes of nature that person is working, that only that person knows. And you can also see, in some cases, that when the modes of nature are favorable, he will automatically, the Krishna consciousness will develop in such a way in him that the higher knowledge also start manifesting in him. This is a symptom of Satvagunam. Satvagunam means a mood of goodness. The Satvagunam by nature is such that three things, Satvagunam, Rajogunam and Tamogunam. What is Satvagunam mean? Satvagunam means knowledge and light. Knowledge and Prakasham. Prakasham means light. This is the knowledge of the Satvagunam. What is Rajogunam? Mode of passion means it is always disturbed mind, disturbed mind and activity. Karmam and the activity and disturbed nature. And what is ignorance? Ignorance means that always laziness and sleep. These are the manifestations of three modes of nature. So in these three modes of nature, you cannot live in a particular nature by your own desire. By executing such activities and by associating with such people who are in the higher modes of nature, one can stay to some extent in that mode of nature. But eventually, Krishna's causeless mercy is necessary even there for a devotee to stay in that consciousness. Otherwise, it's not possible. That is why Krishna is saying there in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam also, he points out this point to Uddhava, that unless one constantly endeavor to stay in the mode of goodness, completely cutting off from all the lower modes of nature, it will not be possible for him to live in that position for a very long time. Krishna says there. So how much importance Krishna gives to mode of goodness, you can see from that. Because in mode of goodness, the knowledge will develop in the right way. Otherwise, the knowledge that is developed in the mode of passion will only create havoc and disturbance to others.
Prabhupada said you must guard your spiritual life.
Yeah.
The other thing is that sometimes we assume that all of the Prabhupada senior disciples are automatically a big devotee. You know? But if you take an example of all the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj's disciples, some of them were Prabhupada criticized their god brother like anything. You know? So you have to always be aware and check that you are getting what you are getting, right?
Yes. Yeah, this is something Prabhupada has spoken many things to understand for us to be careful in doing things, and at the same time it's not necessary for us to analyze what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's disciples were or in what level they were acting.
I'm not commenting, but Prabhupada himself criticized so many.
Prabhupada was not actually criticizing them. Prabhupada was only telling us that in our position,
yeah,
it is better to live like this and do things in this way. And not to mix up too many things together and disturb our own life. That's what Prabhupada was standing against. This is my understanding. But he did not want that we need to have any sort of arguments and quest and confrontation with his godbrothers. Many of his godbrothers, Prabhupada had a very close relationship with as well. But in the practical preaching field, sometimes there is disagreements do happen. And on that level, Prabhupada told the devotees that don't get too involved with their activities. Let them continue in whichever way they... Prabhupada established a system and a style of preaching and a philosophy which suited to the world, today's world, and also to the devotees. So Prabhupada expected that devotees will accept that wholeheartedly and live accordingly in that way, rather than mixing it up with other things. So it is in that point of view that Prabhupada didn't want us to mix with others so closely. It's for this reason that Prabhupada said like that. Not that Prabhupada was very close with Sridhar Maharaj, who was Prabhupada's god brother. And if you see in the conversations, Prabhupada accepts Sridhar Maharaj as one of his close associate and a friend with whom he shared his feelings and thoughts. So from there you can see that although many devotees went to Sridhar Maharaj later and had different ideas about it, and all that, and then the argument starts. But this is not what Prabhupada expected. Prabhupada expected to show some maturity in our thinking, to understand on a spiritual maturity, to show in our own dealings.
Yeah,
All glory Shri Prabhupada.